Welcome to Art Bell Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from March 1st, 2000.
From the high desert and the great American Southwest, I bid you all good evening, or possibly good morning, depending on your time zone. And there are so many stretching from the Hawaiian and Tahitian Islands in the west, eastward to the Caribbean, the U.S. Virgin Islands, south into South America, north all the way to the pole, and worldwide on the Internet. This is Coast to Coast AM, and I'm Art Bell. Interesting story for you. In this first hour, I had received email on Project Echelon. Now, this dovetails very nicely from last night's program. I had received email indicating that the gal who was on 60 Minutes, Margaret, I believe it's N-E-W-S-H-A-M, who is stationed at Menwith Hill in England, where Project Echelon has a major listening post, whatever, would be on the program at 10 o'clock. We had something you didn't know was going to happen, and it apparently is not happening. Now, we talked earlier today, Margaret and I talked, and she said, look, there are some things I can say and some things that will put me in jail. And so I've got to be careful what I refer to and talk about newspaper stories. And I said, oh, that's fine, you know, people can read between the lines. But in calling her phone number now, the same number I spoke with her earlier tonight on, she's not there. The answering machine that had been there is no longer there. Now, I hope she's okay. I'm not a fool. I know that of all the people listened to or that Echelon would listen to, they probably have a full-time tracker on me. Like the Trump trackers we were talking about last night. I have a lot of phone lines and a lot of email and a lot of, you know, I'm very open. So I'm sure that they heard what we were talking about, and I'm not suggesting that anything untoward occurred because Margaret may well have had a flat tire and not been able to get home, but then where would her answering machine be? So that's what we were to do in the first hour. I'll try it again in the break here shortly and see if I can reach her, but I just think it a little odd. She was very anxious indeed to get on the air. I think it a little odd that all of a sudden she is not there. I would hope she didn't get the old traditional, you know, never know. Anyway, what else is going on in the world? Well, that little six-year-old boy who killed a first-grade classmate told investigators Wednesday the shooting was an accident. And he was only trying to scare the girl. He used a stolen handgun. He apparently discovered loaded and lying around in a bedroom at the, in quotes, slop house. They've shown it. It's a .32 caliber pistol. Just lying around in the slop house there. Guess that could be. Flophouse, people come, people go, whether they're going to find the real owner of this thing, I don't know. It was stolen, huh? And somebody who perhaps flopped there, left it there, or had it hidden there or something, and he got hold of it. Maybe hard to trace, huh? And then, if that's not enough, I'll tell you, I don't know what's going on in this country, but the next story down is Pennsylvania gunman kills two and then surrenders. They were covering that nonstop on CNN earlier today. A gunman who apparently flew into a rage Wednesday, shooting a maintenance worker at his apartment in Pennsylvania. Customers at two fast food restaurants near Pittsburgh did surrender to police during a hostage standoff. Two people were killed, three critically wounded. Ronald Taylor, 39, arrested in an office building after he kept police at bay for about 2 hours, holding four or five people in wheelchairs, hostages at a senior hospice center. So, it's madness. Absolute madness. And you can turn on the TV, it seems like, just about any day now and see the madness. Well, Stupefying Tuesday is coming. And politics is hot. Although the talking heads on television appear to be declaring Al Gore the winner, pretty much. And I guess the debate they had was kind of a not such an interesting debate. Apparently, the Democrats, seeing the handwriting on the wall, decided that it would be of no use to have Al Gore and Bradley at each other's throat, you know, when it's kind of a foregone conclusion what's going to happen. Because that just helps the other side. So they took it easy on each other. Tomorrow night it'll be McCain and Bush on CNN where Larry King would normally be, and I doubt they'll take it easy, so that'll be a raucous session, I'm sure, tomorrow night. And the House has passed a law allowing 800,000 senior citizens between 65 and 69 to work without fear of losing Social Security benefits. The vote was 422 to nothing, and the president says he's going to sign. So that means that penalty will go away, and seniors then, if they want to, they can work. They're not going to lose the benefits that they earned. That seems logical to me. All right, let me take a break here and see if perhaps I can reach Margaret now. And if not, why, we'll do a little more and then simply open lines and worry a little bit about Margaret. Say, that's really very, very odd. I spoke with the gal on 60 Minutes, who appeared on 60 Minutes earlier in the day, as I mentioned, and we talked on the phone about Project Echelon. Somebody sent me a list of all the Echelon keywords. And so, as I always do, and particularly in a conversation with this lady, who was a very nice lady, she had an answering machine, and she got the message, called me right back, said, oh, yes, I'd like to go on, worried some about, you know, what she could and couldn't say, but knew how to stay safe. I mean, she referred to articles, you know, things already in print, that sort of thing about Echelon, said that way she can stay out of trouble. And now she's not there. And the phone doesn't answer. And the answering machine doesn't answer. She's just not there. That's odd. Hope she's okay. So, maybe we should be thinking more about this Echelon thing, not less. Huh? So they can listen to telephone conversations, baby monitors, cordless telephones, monitor your email, and any form of communication you do whatsoever, a corded phone, even one plugs into the wall. If you're communicating electronically, the government can be listening. Now, could there be such a big deal about this that she would decide it was in her best interest after somebody had spoken with her not to have a talk here on the air tonight? She was very anxious to have that talk earlier. Very anxious. So, I'm telling you, weird. And here's another, well, maybe it's not weird, not me. Maybe Matt Lauer. It's from ENN News, Daily News. And the person who sent this story to me said, hey, Art, they're catching up to you. Headline, Little Ice Age Holds Big Climate Clues. This really is interesting. Chemical signals from two of the largest volcanic eruptions in human history have allowed scientists to refine, now listen very carefully, refine the chronology of an ice core taken from a Wyoming glacier. The refined chronology indicates an abrupt end to the Little Ice Age. Now, Paul Schuster, a hydrologist with the U.S. Geological Survey in Boulder, Colorado, said, and he'd be qualified, wouldn't he? I quote, now that we have documented a quick climate change in the past, there's no reason not to believe that it will not occur in the future. Obviously, he's saying that if it occurred once, and they have now confirmed that it occurred once, something we talked about in the book that a lot of people got upset about, that there can be a very rapid climate change. Now, all of a sudden, here we have, a hydrologist with the U.S. Geological Survey in Boulder, Colorado, saying, well, guess what? It now looks like quick climate change can occur. I will continue to try Margaret, just in case, by the way, you know, here at the bottom of the hour. And then there's this. Hello, Art. I was watching the 12 noon newscast today on our local ABC affiliate in Nashville when a weatherman put up a chart that he had done. You know, it showed the average temperatures for the winter months during the last 10 years, and 18 were above normal. 18 years. And so he ended his weather report by saying, no, it's not your imagination. It really is heating up out there. So there you have it. It's not your imagination. It really is heating up out there. I've got something that I want to try here, just for the fun of it. The number will probably be busy, but I've always wanted to do this, and now they've given me the number. I'll tell you what it is in a second, because I don't want somebody else to get it first. Okay, here we go. This should be interesting. Yeah, it's busy. It's busy. Too bad. You know what this is? I'm not going to give out the number because a million people would call it, but the number I just called is that phone booth you've heard about. It sits out in the middle of the Mojave Desert. It's just a phone booth by itself, and for some reason, as an urban legend almost, the fact of that lonely phone booth out in the middle of the Mojave Desert has spread worldwide. Worldwide. And there's people that camp out by this phone booth. Why do they camp out there? Just to talk to whoever rings the phone booth. And people from all around the world are ringing the phone booth. Just to talk to whoever might be there waiting for it to ring. Now, you just heard it was busy. Are we a nation of people with too much time on our hands, or what? When sport, on the one end, is somebody camping by a telephone to talk to people who are calling from all around the world, not knowing who's going to be on the other end. I mean, you consider their side of it, from a social point of view, their behavior, camping out there. And then you consider people like me who will pick up the phone and call to see who's on the other end. Just because you can do it. Kind of twisted on both ends, if you ask me. But I was curious, so somebody sent me the number. I don't want to give that out on the air or I'll never get through. So there you have it. Let's begin taking some calls, shall we? Oh, by the way, this is kind of interesting and may relate to a topic we're going to be talking about here in a few minutes. Headline is, computer tycoon to give MIT $350 million, that's a lot of money, to study the mind. To really and truly go where no man has gone before. Inside the human brain, we understand so little about the human brain. And it is such an interesting place inside our own heads that this tycoon has willed his money. What a great purpose, don't you think? $350 million? But in a quarter of $1 billion to study the human brain, the mind? Good place, buddy, to leave your money. And that's quite a bit of money, and they'll be able to do a lot of very serious research. I wonder what they'll find out. The human mind is a big secret. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello. Extinguish your radio, please.
Okay. Hi, all right, Bill. I've been trying to get a hold of you for years.
Well, here you are.
Wow, that's kind of amazing. Now, one thing I have to ask is because I've listened for so long, and I've never heard your story on the Ouija board. I keep hearing you say, we all know what happened with mine, and I don't know.
No, that is not what I say.
Oh, yeah, okay.
What I say, so that we get our story straight here, is that, yes, there was an incident that occurred years ago with that board, and it's the one thing that I will not talk about on the air.
Oh, wow, I'm sorry.
No, that's all right. It really, it's the one thing I will not talk about on the air.
Okay, I have a question for you, and a specific question on entities.
Entities. All right, well, I'm not an expert on entities, but ask away.
I work in a machine shop by myself every night. There's no one else in the building that ever has been. But lately, I've been seeing and hearing things that just not right. And this evening, a buddy of mine left from here, and I felt a hard shove into my back, and there was no one else here.
A hard shove on your back.
I started to walk back to my...
Now, feeling a little breeze or a coldness in a room is one thing. Getting shoved on the back by something, I take it, invisible?
Yeah, because I turned around, there was absolutely nothing there. And yeah, it was a hard shove that made me stumble on my walk.
Oh, that's very bad.
That's what I was thinking.
Very bad.
I've been hearing, you know, because we have hallways in here. And,
what have you heard?
I hear feet, people running down the hallways and things.
Running?
Yes, running. And there's no one else in the building, and I know for a fact because I have...
What kind of place is this you're in again?
It's a machine shop.
A machine shop?
Yes, sir.
And so you're there, what, alone?
Yes, sir. I'm completely alone. I'm alone every night.
And you're guarding it?
No, I run machines.
You run machines,
yeah.
But you work all by your lonesome self?
Yeah. I think that's illegal in itself, but I'm not sure.
No, it's not illegal. At least I don't think it is. Unless there's some sort of OSHA rule I don't know about. Listen, I'm coming on a break. Can you hold on?
Absolutely.
Good. I want to talk some more with you. Machine shop. Shoves in the middle of the night. Not just hearing running sounds, but getting shoved. That would be the limit for me in terms of, hey, I'm out of here. And I am for the moment.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from March 1st, 2000.
We've been traveling far. It's about our home. But not without a star.
Stop!
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from March 1st, 2000.
Now, Margaret, who was on 60 Minutes and wanted to come on this program tonight, Margaret is unavailable. Her phone isn't answering. Her answering machine isn't answering. Pretty odd. We had a firm date. Subject echelon. Anyway, something to wonder about. Well, Margaret is still not there. That's really pretty weird, I would say. Pretty weird. But also, is the call we have right now. Hi there.
Hello.
You still there?
Yes, sir.
Okay, are you on a cellular?
Yes, I am.
You are? Okay. Well, sounds pretty good for us, as cellulars go, actually. I'm hearing a beeping sound in the background. Is that...
That's always there every time I'm at my work. I don't know why.
Must be the machines.
Could be.
But getting pushed in the back is really a serious thing by an invisible force. How long has this kind of thing been going on, pray tell?
Well, see, the other day I was listening to your show and you was doing Ghost to Ghost. I don't know if it was a replay or live.
No, it was live.
And I was trying to get a hold of you then to tell you about my ghost because this had not yet happened. But it's just something that, you know, I've been hearing things and I'll be looking into the screen of my computer or my machine.
Right.
And I'll see stuff in the screen that's not really there.
And
it reminds me so much of, like, something out of a Stephen King movie. I just don't want to be the victim, you know. And then I put in my notice today.
In other words, you're out of there. You're quitting. I don't blame you for a minute. What have you seen, you know, on a computer screen that shouldn't be there?
It's a black screen with green writing on it. It reflects everything that's behind me.
Right.
And I'll see... Just faces, random faces, and it's not
faces.
They're like echoed faces. They're not real clear, and it's just the weirdest thing because I'm one of the normal guys. I don't believe in the ghosts and this, that, and the other, and I like to hear the stories, but I just never had anything substantial to say. Hey, this is really happening, and it's blowing my mind that I put up my notice this morning.
You're going to quit your job.
Oh, yeah. Well, I started my own company. It had very little to do with what was going on.
Oh, okay.
I just started my own company. And then it just seemed like it got violent tonight for some reason.
Maybe. Now, wait a minute. Let's think about this. Causal relationship. You say you turned in your nose, you're quitting, and you just did that, and here you got pushed.
Right.
Has it occurred to you that... Whatever's entity is there is objecting to your leaving, having given notice.
This is exactly what I was thinking.
Yeah. Now, how much notice did you give?
I gave them a month because there's no one. There's
you
only.
You gave them a month, man. You
right.
could be dead 100 times in a month. I mean, you could have a machine. You know, I've seen the movies. A
right.
drilling machine with a half-inch drill is going to come right down, go right through your belly.
That ironically, that's what I run is all meals.
I'm kidding.
there's only three of these meals in Indiana, and I happen to be one.
Oh, jeez.
And I happen to be one of very few people who know how to run them. That's why I gave them a month so they could find somebody.
But don't you know this is how every horror story you've ever heard, how it begins?
Right. That's the freaky part. And I just attributed the sounds and stuff to, you know, my mind playing tricks on me. I tried to find some sort of a common sense reason for this happening.
Uh-huh.
But tonight, you know, I couldn't say, well, it was a muscle spasm or I got in the upper back. I got hit so hard it actually made me stumble while I was walking. And I turned immediately around.
Are you sure that you just didn't trip?
Oh, no. There wasn't a trip. It felt like something whacked me pretty good. And
you know, what do you figure your odds are of making it through 30 days? Just curious. I mean, if we're right, I mean, because I believe in that kind of thing, cause and then relationship cause, when something happens, it,
right.
you know, Occam's razor is most likely answer, even though we're talking about a ghost here, that it's ticked off at you. You understand?
Yeah.
Angry with you? Very displeased with you?
Ironically, you would say that because the first time that I brought up quitting was about when everything started. I was speaking with my fiance on the phone, and I told her, you know, I'm going to go ahead and, you know, quit when spring comes around because it's an outside cable construction company that I started.
So now we've got two causes and effects.
Right. I'm thinking maybe I shouldn't stick around, huh?
Well, are you familiar with the phrase, the walking dead?
Yeah. It's hard for me to comprehend. It really is. I'm
referring to you.
Right.
The walking dead. If you're going to stay there a month, and the violence begins to escalate from where it has begun now.
I'm already dead, is what you're saying.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't say that for sure, but it's something that a person could say based on what you've told me. So, while I certainly wouldn't want to tell you what to do, because I don't want to leave your boss in a bind.
Right. That was my problem with it, too. But, you know, this is strange.
Have you, out of curiosity, told your boss about this problem?
No. I have spoke to a coworker, and he said I wouldn't go around telling people about that if I were you. And that's all he said. And he said it with a very serious face. He didn't take it as a joke or anything. He just said, I wouldn't go around telling people that if I were you.
This was what? A daytime or a swing shift worker?
Yeah, he's the guy I come in and replace at night. Because I told him, you know, I've been hearing freaky stuff. And he said, well, the building's old. You know, we're downtown Indianapolis. You're bound to hear something.
Yeah.
And
what, did you tell him about the pushing?
That just happened this evening after a buddy left. Because I have people come over and hang out with me, you know, keep me company. And he left, and just as he left, I was walking back to my machine, and that's when I got shoved, or whatever hit, in the back.
Near your machine?
Yeah, well, about 20, 25 feet away from it.
Well, these milling machines, I really don't know what kind of machine. I was joking, you know, with the drill thing. I'm sorry. What are they, actually? What do they do? If you were to get tangled up in one of them, what would happen to you?
I would have about 4 seconds worth of life before it would be over. You don't have any time to react. You just
well, I mean, what would the machine do?
It would crush me. It would either send an end mill through me or it would crush me.
Send what through you?
An end mill. It's a drill with no tip. It's sharpened on the ends of the tip and it's flat. It's called an end mill.
Or it would crush you.
Or crush me with a hydraulic press.
With a hydraulic press.
Right.
Not the ideal way to go, as you consider ways to go.
Right. But my question, the whole reason I called is, I tried to get a hold of you anyway, but I called because I want to know, can these things really physically move you?
Well,
you already
answered your own question.
I got hit, but I'm still in disbelief. I don't understand why it happened, or, you know.
Close your eyes. And imagine yourself alone in the mill, in the dark, at night, for the next month. Then imagine yourself involuntarily one day raising into the air and slowly sailing toward the operating mill machine.
That's not exactly the picture-perfect sight.
No, but I mean, it's something that you've got to consider on the one side with all that's happened. While on the other side, considering whether your boss can get a replacement in there real quick or not.
No, just stick someone else in the fire.
All right, look, I have no idea. I could never advise somebody in your situation. I can only tell you that if it was me, my ass would be long out of there, buddy.
Yeah.
All right?
One more question.
Yes?
What was that guy using that trapped his ghost?
The what ghost?
The guy.
Oh, what did he use to trap the ghost?
Right. Just out of curiosity.
He used some kind of microwave bug zappers. But, you know, and he had it, somehow he had trapped it in a specific area. That was Rodney, actually. His name was Rodney. And it was, I wouldn't be depending on doing that, you know, in such a big area as a machine shop.
Right. Well, thank you for your time, sir.
Well, hey, listen, do what your gut tells you to do, man. All right?
All right, thanks.
See ya. Good luck. Let us know. Call us back. And Margaret's not even there from this. She's going to tell the whole Echelon story. I'm telling you, that's too odd. Just too odd. Where is Margaret? West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello, Art Bell. This is Tawasi calling from Eugene, Oregon.
Tawasi, huh? All right.
Yeah, I'm calling actually about the fellow who just called.
Okay.
I feel that spirits, after they leave bodies,
yes,
continue to have a will. Like they consciously choose what they want to do.
Well, then that's saying a lot, because you're saying that consciousness continues after death, full consciousness.
I believe so. And you know the saying, where there's a will, there's a way?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, if consciousness continues after death, if will continues after death, then spirit could cause someone to sail across the room.
Well, you know, as I told the fellow who called, you can imagine what I detailed for him occurring, or you can imagine that he works out the month, or you can imagine that he gets the hell out of there.
Well, I have a solution for that, actually.
What?
That is that we are all part of the same spirit. So if he believes that that spirit is nothing more or less than he is, then any effect that it has on him is actually him affecting himself.
Okay, well, it's worth a shot, of course, but if you're wrong, and it's a real entity doing a real thing, I mean, do you really want to take that responsibility? If the worst should occur, if you're not right. You're suggesting essentially the monster from the id within. Yeah, possible. But if you're wrong, he's going to get drilled. Wildcard line, you're on the air.
Heard.
Oh, my. Here we go.
Can you hear me?
Well, yes, now I do. That's a little better.
Oh, okay. I got a crappy cell phone.
Yeah, I know. I can hear it. A giant step backward for mankind.
I hear you. Well, this was digital, too, so that's even worse.
I know. I mean, listen to this connection, folks. Is this better? Say something else, sir.
Okay.
Are you actually moving as you're talking?
Yeah, I'm in a big truck.
You're in a truck. Oh, okay, you're in a truck. Well.
Yeah, so that makes it even worse yet.
Well, you're communicating, but we have not made an advance here, is what I want to say.
Well, I was wanting to tell that guy that called about the ghost, just think, you're never alone. Even when you think, the time you think you're most alone, you never will be.
Well, then you, what do you think, that it would do him no good whatsoever to get out of there?
No, I mean, even when he quits, the guy, if it's a ghost, it's just going to follow him. And if it don't, he'll find another one.
Yeah, but ghosts have been known to not follow. In other words, to remain in the abode that they are stalking and haunting.
Well, like I said, he'll find another one. Well, if he's lucky, he'll wait a while and then find one, but it always happens.
Now, if everything that happened to him had happened to you and you were in there with those big machines, what would you do?
Oh, I'd have quit before, I mean, the first chance I had.
So that would mean that tonight he's got special danger because he's considering, you know, telling the boss that's it. I don't want to wake up crushed or whatever. Crushed. Reminds me of a James Bond movie, you know, where somebody's tied down and the drill motor is slowly coming down toward the eyeball, right? I don't know exactly if it was James Bond, but James Bondish. Wildcard line, you're on the air. Hi.
Hello there, Art. This is Fritz.
Hey, Fritz.
Hey, I can assure you that you have a full-time tracker, maybe more than one.
Oh, listening to me? I know. That's okay.
But anyhow, the reason I called you, we the people in Phoenix can be so proud of it to have a man among us by the name of Peter Gersten. He's doing such a remarkable job breaking through the lift of silence of the greatest mystery of all time.
I know.
And I think it's time that you let people out there support Peter Gersten financially. How about kicking in a few bucks?
Yep. Well, I could not agree more. And if I had a... of course, Peter will be back on soon, so...
But I think it's time, because
we'll
the man is
address.
Really out on a limb and doing the best for all of us.
I know. That's a hell of a job to do, when you think about it. To take on the government and to go after them the way he has is an awesome thing to do.
And I'm
sure
they're listening to his phone, let me tell you. But anyhow, America, let's chip in a little bit.
I'm with you all the way, buddy.
Okay.
All right, thanks. And we'll find a way to... You know, have that happen. A lot of cause members out there could consider what Fritz just said. You know, they would have a way to contact him right away. Thousands of cause members out there. So, yeah, he's right. He really does deserve some help. And, you know, doing what he does, pro bono, with his own money, whatever he can scratch up as an attorney, that's quite a thing to do. Because otherwise, as an attorney, you could be, you know, as you well know, if you know attorneys, you could be making a lot of money. You could sure be making a lot of money. So that's something he's doing, and he's doing it really for you. So I agree with Fritz that we should be supporting Peter Gersten. And rock and roll, and let's see what happens. They're going to come back with something that's going to put them in the hole, you mark my words. They're going to have to come back and they're going to say, national security, sorry. Or they're going to have to come back and say, ooh, we found a file. There does seem to be a file. Sorry about that. I don't know, I can't wait to see what they come back with myself. So anyway, that's the end of the first hour. And in the next hour, coming up just in a moment, is going to be... is going to be the man who will tell you about going outside your body and more.
If I had told her that I loved her, she would have stayed till who knows when. But I guess she couldn't understand it when I said I want to be your friend.
Albert Taylor of Soul Traveler fame is up next. And he's got a new book coming out called Soul Traveler 2, To Hell and Back. I have questions about that.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from March 1st, 2000.
I didn't lose her, 'cause you can't lose a friend you never had.
Come on now.
Because a friend won't say it's over and go out as close by. And now I wonder what she's doing
to be covered and then to burst up through tarmac to the sun again, or to fly to the sun without burning a wing, to lie in a meadow and hear the grass sing, to have all these things in our memories hoard and to use them to help us.
Just go ahead. Ride.
Radio Networks presents Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight's program originally aired March 1st, 2000.
We're about to talk a little bit about getting out of your body. And I know it sounds crazy on the face of it, but it absolutely can be done. You really can do it. Whether you believe it or not, you can do it. The reason I know that is I've done it once, briefly, shockingly, and suddenly. But I've done it myself, so it can be done. I know it can be done. The guy who wrote the book on it is Albert Taylor, Dr. Albert Taylor. And he'll be here in a minute. By the way, he's written a new book that's going to be a source of some discussion tonight. It's not out yet. Can't get it until 2001. I like that year, 2001. Soul Traveler 2 is going to be entitled, shockingly, To Hell and Back. To Hell and Back. Albert Taylor always maintained there's no such address. So I am shocked at the title of his new book. We'll ask about that and a lot more. Here is an article, by the way, just as a side note, from the Herald Sun in Melbourne, Australia, big newspaper in Australia, and they're having record hot temperatures for February. Record hot. Headline is, a close second for dead heat, and there's a whole article about how hot it is in Australia. Just in case you thought we were the only ones noticing, I thought I'd drop that in. It's kind of a puzzle we're trying to put together here. Once again, Dr. Albert Taylor. Welcome back, Albert.
Thank you.
You know, somebody, going back for a moment, regressing for a moment, somebody reminds me that about 3 weeks ago, maybe a little more now, we tried to fire something from California and shoot it down over the Pacific, and we missed. And so then they had a second test. And we reportedly destroyed whatever it was.
Right. Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah. Used a kinetic, it was a kinetic device of
some
sort. You know, a million BBs or however, whatever they use. I don't know what they use. Anyway.
There's a few different designs.
Giant thousands of Ginzu knives. Who knows?
Right.
Anyway, if we had the technology that you're talking about. Then why would we be testing this? Wouldn't this be sort of just like a cover thing
for
what the real capabilities are?
Well, what's interesting about SDI, it's multi-layered. So you don't just have one type of vehicle, one type of thing to knock out a target. You have even like third, fourth, you know, phase vehicles that can actually still do the same job. So we have kinetic kill. We have the particle. We have this part of the kinetic kill would be this coil-like thing, which is really fascinating. It's this thing that when it gets close to the missile, it expands to this giant spherical coil, maybe about, I don't know, 20 feet in diameter, and it just slices through whatever it's heading toward.
Like a slinky.
Oh, definitely. And then there's another vehicle that I really found fascinating. I can't remember the name of it right now, but I remember when we were testing it, that it's capable of actually hovering in not only in Earth's atmosphere, but, you know, it's matter of fact, it can hover in a room, which is fascinating. And that thing can move laterally and forward and all of that to home in on its target.
Whoa!
It's incredible.
What kind of propulsion to...
Oh, it's nothing really that odd. It has nozzles and things like that. And matter of fact, they fire off, they almost sound like the old pulse jets. Do you remember those?
Sure.
That's what it sounds like, except it's definitely controlled in each one of the nozzles, which point out in all different directions so that it's capable of moving three-dimensionally. fired depending on what the system is telling it to do, and all three of the nozzles are throttleable. It's really fascinating. I can't remember the name of the vehicle, though. But, you know, I know you love this stuff, and I have tons and tons of stuff, so I'm just going to go through, and I'm going to get you a little care package, and I'm going to send it to you, Art. It's going to be some really nice stuff to look at.
I'm worried enough with all the stuff I have around here. You know, and my guest last hour, she's not even there, and her answering machine isn't there.
Well, wherever they, when they come and get you, Art, you know, I'll be there waiting for you, because I'll probably be sitting in the cell, too. We'll have company.
Yeah. All right, well,
Whitley will be there, too.
Yep. I know that what you talk about mainly, that leaving the body, I know from personal experience, it's real. You can
right.
do it. It can be done. Now, I've never done some of the wild trips that you've done,
mm-hmm.
that you've told us about, but I know it can be done. I just know because it happened to me.
Right.
So that obviously sparks a lot of interest in me. I mean, leaving your body is a pretty neat thing, but I understand you've written a new book. You and I have had a lot of conversations
mm-hmm.
about the possible downside of leaving your body.
Right. Right.
And you have always maintained, steadfastly maintained, throughout all of my challenges and all of my worries.
And still do, but
no,
go on.
No problem, Art. No sweat. You can leave your body. You will come back. There will not be a problem. There will not be somebody else waiting there having taken your body. There will not be your body moved off somewhere.
Right.
You will not possibly go to a bad place.
Right.
You will have a good experience. It will be wonderful. And now you've written a book called Soul Traveler 2, To Hell and Back.
Back, right.
Yes.
And you know, it's funny because I'm... You know, I do this once in a while. I'm in the grassy knoll on AOL, and one of the members in there asked me, he mentioned the Audie Murphy movie, To Hell and Back.
Right.
And that's exactly what inspired that title, is the Audie Murphy movie, To Hell and Back. And the reason I even selected that subtitle, because that's the subtitle, the title of Soul Traveler 2.
Yeah.
But the subtitle is because of our conversations and how so many people believe in a hell. And all of my experiences, and I've had tons on the non-physical side,
yeah.
I haven't seen any traces of a hell. But I can say this, since my life is on both sides of the line, you would say, the non-physical and the physical, the closest thing to hell that I have experienced has definitely been in the physical body, and Art, I would say, is a definite result of my book, Soul Traveler. That's what that is all about. It is about the hell that the soul traveler, that wonderful little diary that I started so many years ago, has really dragged me through, so to speak.
Why has it dragged you to a physical hell?
Oh, God. First of all, when I first wrote this book, I self-published it. And I self-published it. I got a distributor.
Having all that experience, having all that experience in previous stealth work.
Right. Well, you know, I had this weird idea that somebody would be interested in reading this information and what I've discovered about the night paralysis.
Yes.
Even though my wife at the time, I was married at the time, thought that everything was great. She was supportive as long as I didn't get carried away, like quit my job. You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So I had this idea. I really felt it deep, deep down in my soul that I wanted to get this book out there for the people to read. And it came to the point where I had to make a decision between aerospace and this book. And
sure.
I chose the book. Totally disrupted my home life. Wrecked it, as a matter of fact. Next thing I knew, I found myself in divorce court pretty much. With the book was about all I got out of the divorce. And I'm sitting there thinking, okay, well, then I'm just going to try to market this spiritual book the best I can. And I got a distributor, which was one of the top five distributors in the United States,
mm-hmm.
which was Atrium at the time. They've since then gone defunct. But here the book was beginning to sell, and this was before you and I contacted each other.
Right.
You contacted me.
Right.
Here I was waiting for this money. I sold about maybe equivalent of $100,000 worth of books which would have paid for my printing bill and paid for my rent and probably started supporting me a little bit.
Sure.
And I was waiting for the mail to come, standing out there, and the mailman came, and then there was this wonderful envelope with Atrium on it. And I thought, ah, my check is here. You know, I'm surviving since I left aerospace. I opened up the envelope, and inside was a letter saying that we're sorry, but because the times have been gone rough, that we're going bankrupt with all of your money, and we may be able to pay you 10 cents on a dollar at some future date. That was the beginning
of
the
hell.
Oh, my
God. Well, that's hell, all right.
That was the beginning. And it got worse, and the ride got steeper and faster from there, Art.
So you've got a great hit book, and notice that you're not going to get your money.
Right, exactly. That was the first thing that really... So that forced me into... I was the publisher. Since I was self-published,
yeah.
I came up with Verity Press Publishing, which, you know, produced the first book. And that forced Verity Press Publishing into bankruptcy. Times started getting even worse, where I had, all of a sudden, I went from possibility of doing very well to having zero income. I mean, absolutely nothing.
Uh-huh.
And over a period, 2 months after I got that letter, I had already separated from my family, was living in another place. I was sitting there 2 months later with an eviction notice, with a letter from the repo man was looking for my car. I had a letter from the utilities people who were going to cut off my electricity in about a week or two. The gas was going to be cut off.
We're talking about the bottom here.
It was the hell. That was the beginning. I was at the gates of hell at that time. let's see, what else? Oh, and last but not least, I had this idea to put my email address inside my book. And I'm glad I did, because I felt that if people read my book, it was very rare that you get to talk to the author and write him a letter directly.
That's true.
So I put it in there, and that was the best thing I've ever done, because you and I would not be speaking if I hadn't done that. But AOL was going to cut off my email account because I couldn't pay them even.
Mm.
And I'm sitting there, and all I had was, I'd just gotten back from a California tour, book signing tour, where I spent literally my last bit of savings that I had to go around and speak at Barnes & Noble and these different bookstores all over the place. And I spoke at this one little, tiny little bookstore in Fresno, I believe it was Fresno, California, where it was about maybe 25 people or so there. This woman jumped up in the middle of my lecture, which was real strange, and interrupted the lecture and started telling me about a party she was going to. And I listened to her for a while, and then that trip ended, and I thought nothing of that lady jumping up and doing that, and I was kind to her, and she gave her a book, and she left. So I came home, and 2 months later, I was sitting here with all these eviction notices and all that, and I sat there because, now this is where the spiritual part comes in. I know beyond a shadow of a doubt, and it has nothing to do with my beliefs, Art. I know that I have had experiences out of body in my soul with a non-physical entity that I think is like an angel. And it's not about me trying to convince anybody. That is a part of my reality now, and it was something that I literally ran from. I did not want to believe that.
Jay, what do we know about angels?
What do we know?
Yeah. In other words, I've seen all the Christopher Walken movies.
Mm-hmm.
And in most of those movies, the angels, well, they're not exactly the in crowd.
That's that Christian spin on it now. I'm not talking about religion.
Well,
little different.
Yeah, but
little differently. That's a Christian spin when you're talking about fire and brimstone.
Okay, but you use the word angel.
Yeah.
An angel as defined in the Bible.
There may be some other places that angel is defined, but that's one. Yeah.
No, you're using that word
right.
Angel. Now, maybe you shouldn't be using the word angel. If you really think it's an angel, then you've got to accept the possibility that these are, like I said, not the in crowd. I mean, passed off from God. And
one of the reasons that I use the word angel in this particular context, because I don't want to say higher self right now, because we haven't even touched on that area. But that's where people can kind of still understand where I'm headed and what kind of being or entity I'm kind of talking about. I can go into further and really tell you what I really feel this thing is, but I think angel, for the amount of the description that I've given thus far in this conversation here, kind of still, people are still following me. So we can explore that a little more, and we can go back into what I really feel is this angelic-like thing, but not necessarily the angel type of thing that you would see in a lot of religions, the way they describe it. But it's still, to me, a rose by any other name still smells of sweet. So it doesn't matter what you call this thing, it still has its particular function, and it's independent of what you believe.
Okay, but if there is a creator, which you believe, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then you have to imagine the possibilities that these entities that you see, plural, mm-hmm. are angels. As I mean, after all, they were written about extensively.
Mm-hmm.
And remember the angels and the earth girls and the Nephilim and the big flood and all of that. So, I mean, all of that is outlined.
Right.
For the kind of entity that you're talking about.
Right. But let's not think that that is all the information there is possibly to know about what we're talking about.
Yeah, but you have to think that it's one really strong possibility.
Yes, and I wouldn't want to dispute or invalidate it at all. I just would like to add more pieces to the puzzle. And my pieces may be a little bit different. Well, my pieces are metaphysical, to tell you the
truth.
But
haven't you ever wondered, in other words, that you might be dealing with an entity that has you bamboozled?
You know, I thought about that many times, and all I can say is, well, you know, I can say this, that I have more trust in this thing that has been assisting me and been there for me
yes.
than I have ever had in any single thing on this planet. I do not doubt it. I do not fear it.
Because of
it does not challenge my faith in one little bit.
Because of what it has done for you in this physical world.
Of time spent with this.
But again,
it's like for instance, when Daniel had his near death experience.
Yes.
And he had an encounter with the being of light.
By the way, you sound like Daniel.
That's what you always say. And Daniel is a wonderful friend of mine, and he's helped me so much. I'm truly grateful to him because he was one of the few people that I could actually talk about this. Beyond just using the label angel. We were talking about the same thing, but Daniel was very, very non-dogmatic in his references.
Let me return to my question. You're very thankful for what this angel,
yes.
we'll call it an angel, has done for you in this physical world, right?
Yes, as far as my understanding of why I'm here, yes.
Yeah.
Because if I would have remained in the dark, I think that would have promoted hopelessness. But it allowed me to have a spiritual light at the end of the tunnel, no matter how bad my life got. And that's what this is all about. I still realized that there was something more.
Well, you know that thing that you travel with, your soul?
Mm-hmm.
How do you know that in the desperation and the bottom where you say you hit, and,
mm-hmm.
and obviously you were, I mean, the terrible place you were in,
mm-hmm.
and then you have an encounter with an angelic being, and then things do begin to get better, which they did. They begun, they're getting better, right?
Right. Yes.
How can you be absolutely sure that you have not signed a piece of paper, in essence, saying
with Beelzebub?
Well, yeah. I mean, that you made a deal. Stay right there. Just sign right here, son. You'll be able to leave anytime you want. It's just that the final trip will be to here. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time, on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from March 1st, 2000.
Georgia. He was looking for a soul to steal. He was in a bind because he was way behind. He was willing to make a deal. When he came across this young man sawing on a fiddle and playing it hot, and the devil jumped up on a hickory stump and said, "Boy, let me tell you what. I guess you didn't know it, but I'm a fiddle player too. And if you'd care to take a dare, I'll make a bet with you. Now, you play pretty good fiddle, boy, but give the devil his due. I bet a fiddle of gold against your soul, because I think I'm better than you." The boy said, "My name's Johnny, and it might be a sin, but I'll take your bet, and you're going to regret, because I'm the best as ever been." Johnny, rosin up your bow and play your fiddle hard.
Premier Radio Networks presents Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight's program originally aired March 1st, 2000.
Well, you know, that's exactly the kind of deal that you know I'm talking about. We'll ask Al Taylor, Dr. Al Taylor, more about that in a moment. Stay right where you are. This is Coast to Coast AM from the high desert where it's cold and dark. Well, here he is again, Dr. Albert Taylor. Albert, welcome back.
Thank you, Art. You know, Art, I was thinking, you know, you asked me if I, how do I know that...
Well, all right, here. Let's try this approach. When you finally physically die, your soul takes, basically, at least for a period of time, a one-way trip. And they all leave at gate H, right? Now, how do you know... I mean, we've had reports of these really weird vehicles diving into the ocean. How do you know that your vehicle, when you get on at gate H, is going up versus, you know...
versus going down, the subterranean route.
That's right.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of reasons.
If life way up there is good, and here it's almost hell... Then, I mean, just figure it out for yourself. You go further down, what do you get? Real hell.
Okay, the one that convinces me personally, and not that I try to convince anyone else, because you can't do that with this kind of information. I mentioned in my book, in the chapter, A Relative Encounter, and that is, see, I never believed in ghosts and things like that until I started having these experiences. And then I started having experiences with an aunt of mine who died back in 1982. And I really doubted if it were really her. And eventually I came to accept that it really was whatever was left of what she was and was something else.
What do you mean left of what she was?
Well, because she didn't have a lot of her personality traits and ego and things like that that we walk around with today.
A former shadow.
Right, exactly. She was more... She was in her pure form, rather than in a contaminated form like we are, you know, here.
So you're saying she's better than she was?
Oh, definitely, definitely, because you've let go of a lot of the things that really cause us the most problems in our lives, and that is our ego and fears and all those things. She wasn't in that state at all. She was in a super state of consciousness and awareness and actual being. But the
yeah,
thing
all
about
of this,
it, though,
all of this sounds so nice, but I mean, what about football, beer, and sex?
Well, see, that's a judgment call that they don't care about any of that stuff on the other side. Well, you know, I'm a member of the International Association of Near Death Studies.
Well, then why would they call it heaven?
Well, wait a minute, Art. Okay, let me back up. Okay, first of all, this is why I don't believe in hell. And this is may sound comical, but it's truly, it really hits home for me. My aunt, when she was alive, I would say she was the black sheep of the family. She was the one that always ruined weddings. She was the one that always ruined funerals, even. She was
what
the
do
one
you mean she
always,
ruined funerals?
Well, she would get drunk and start talking about the deceased.
Oh.
She was that type of person.
I see. And
after having these encounters out of body with this entity, I realized that there was no hell, because if there was one, she would have been locked up in it. So I know I could no longer...
Look, I'm not sure getting bombed and sounding off at somebody's funeral, no matter how nasty it might be, gets you to the gates of hell.
Well, that's just the tip of the iceberg. She was something else. She was the spice in our family.
Well,
let's say that. But, okay, now let's back up to the International Association of Near-Death Studies.
Yes.
A lot of people, 8 million people in the United States have had near-death experiences. Out of that percentage, a small, very, very small, maybe even 1% or less, actually have negative experiences.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe let's just say 5%.
The most famous, the most interesting that I've ever interviewed was Sarah, who had one hellish experience. It was about a two-hour interview.
Right.
And we're
going to,
and by the way, we're going to replay that interview this coming Saturday, I think. And it was so utterly, absolutely convincing.
Mm-hmm.
Her story, I must tell you, Albert, sounded as good as any story you've ever told about all the good experiences you've had. I mean, she was every bit as sincere.
Oh, yeah. No, I don't doubt that, you know. And that's the thing. See, this is what's fascinating about when you leave the physical body, either temporarily or as the result of trauma, like in a near-death experience.
Right.
A lot of things can happen. So I truly believe that whatever she said, she experienced.
Well, so do I.
But now
that's why you and I are always arguing about this.
Right. Now, this is the thing, though. This is the kicker that I found. Out of all the people who've had a near-death experience, most of them, except for Danyon, he's so fortunate, he's had three. Most people have one experience. And usually they don't understand it at the time, and maybe it was before the term near-death was coined. And now they talk about it, and it's been years later on what they remember. One of the things that I found, that if I were to just tell you about my first out-of-body experience, and if that were the only experience I'd ever had,
right,
it would be totally wrong and totally based on fear and totally negative, because I was so afraid and horrible things happened. But I found out that a lot of the things that happened, I was creating. Because when you get in that state, it's almost like becoming a genie. Any kind of things you think about can manifest, but it doesn't mean that it's real. It can just contaminate the out-of-body experience that you're having.
So you're saying then that an out-of-body experience is like an acid trip, set and setting, you know, all
it's
of a sudden.
It's like having magical powers almost.
It's like having a bad acid trip, right? Right?
Well, it can be very, very frightening.
Well,
in that way.
People who have taken LSD negative circumstances have extremely negative experiences.
Yeah, you can, because you're open to extreme emotional levels, be it fear or love. And when you get into a fear mode, which most of us set off with that foot first, unfortunately, that sets the tone for the experience. And when that happens, all of a sudden your imagination, because that's something that you really have to control in the out-of-body experience, because you can really have a negative experience if your imagination runs amok.
But see, what you're really preaching, though, Al, is...
Well, I hope I'm not preaching.
Well what you're saying,
uh-huh,
right? What you're really saying is that, look, if you have a bad experience, it's all in your head. There's no such real thing as experience. In other words, not really. If you have had a bad experience, it's because you brought it on yourself or because the conditions were bad. There is no such thing as a real bad experience.
Well, I don't want to imply that I'm painting with a broad brush, because that place is not devoid of life. There are entities there at multiple levels of awareness, and some at lower levels, of especially the astral plane and the physical, who can play tricks and games with you. So I can't say that all experiences, if you interpret it to be negative, are self-created.
So then you are backing off a little.
But I can say this, that there are a lot of experiences that you can misinterpret, especially if you've only done it once or been there once, that you would definitely think were negative and real. But it doesn't mean that it's real. It's taken me, and this is why I say this, because here it is all these years later that I haven't had any more negative experiences once I understood how to control it. So if there were something negative to experience, I still should be having them. But that doesn't happen anymore. And I talk to a lot of people who have had out-of-body experiences. Bill Bowman is one of my dear friends.
Right.
And he also, once you get past that state where you stop throwing things in the mix, you start having what I call, and what he refers to also, as the pure, uncontaminated out-of-body experience. And that's what I'm talking about. If it's going to come up, if there were something there, it should come up. I should have experienced that periodically, but that hasn't happened. So that's what I based that on, is the fact that I've improved myself and my understanding, and it seems to have affected my experiences 100%. So if there was something negative, Art, believe me, I would share it, because I don't want to mislead anybody. I want to provide as much information on the table as possible for the individual to realize and accept or reject it if they choose to. So I never try to convince anybody. But what's wonderful about it is I get thousands of letters now as a result of your show, and I would say 95% of those, if not more, are all positive. So if there's negative, then it's like worrying about having a car crash every time you get in your car. The chances are very, very slim, if at all.
That's not true. You're more likely to be killed in your car than you are in an airplane.
That's very true. Airplanes are safe. But a lot of people fear airplanes more than cars.
Well, that's true.
So if it were going to happen, I'm a scientist, then I would look at, okay, well, every hundredth time a negative thing happens, like with the shuttle. I can honestly tell you, if we keep using the shuttle, there is going to be another catastrophic explosion because of the law, the probability of a failure.
Well, okay, then why can't we also say that if Albert Taylor keeps leaving his body on a fairly regular basis, one of these days he's going to come back to it and try to get back in, and it's going to be all white and cold and dead?
And you know, we could say that, but then you got to think about this. There is so much historical data on people having experiences like this that it goes back eons. It's been hidden in areas like the occult for a long, long period of time. This is nothing new that I'm talking about.
Yeah, except that the white, cold, dead people don't come back to talk about it. Only the ones who have the NDEs come back to talk about it. The other ones, they're gone. They're history. So how do you know they didn't come back and go, oh, my God, look at my body. I'm dead.
Well, I look at this.
Maybe that's where ghosts come from, Al.
Well, let me tell you this. Leaving the body is one thing, but then there's something that happens every once in a while when you leave the body. And it's far more than just an activity. And it happened to me for the first time, and I never even imagined it or even knew it was even possible. It happened to me in 1993 in July. I never, ever will forget it. This is when I was leaving the body and thinking, okay, what do I want to do now? I would go to friends' houses. I would fly around and that type of thing. But while I was hovering there in my bedroom, and it's in my book, this is what happened. All of a sudden, I felt as if my consciousness was literally opened up, and everything you could possibly want to know about anything was temporarily poured in. I had this awareness that I had never, ever experienced, and what happened was I suddenly realized who and what I truly was and who and why I really came here to experience this life as Albert Taylor. And the thing about it is, what's the difference between what happened to me and a dream is when I came back to the physical body, and I haven't had a near-death experience, but when I came back to the physical body after this experience, the fear of death has left me and has never, ever returned. And one of the things that I realized is, oh, my God, after I started meeting all these people who had near-death experiences, they were talking about the exact same thing. So there's consistency across the board.
Well, I were to suggest to you, playing devil's advocate, I like to say when I'm doing that, that these people who have had NDEs and now no longer fear death are delusional. In other words, they've had a delusion. They've had an experience that they has convinced them, surely, in belief. I mean, I know you believe what you're saying.
Well, you know, that's one way of looking at it, but I look at it like they were delusional before they had the experience.
And that the out-of-body experience is the reality.
Yes, it clarified things.
And being stuck in the body and never knowing your spiritual self is not the reality.
Correct.
Matrix.
One of the things we find out is we believe everything our five senses tell us. And if you know, and I know, there's electronic equipment that can measure things far beyond the spectrums or the range of the five senses.
Oh, yeah.
So the five senses, automatically, we know they don't tell us everything. Even scientists are admitting that 90% of the matter in space is dark matter and something that we can't detect now.
That's true. They are.
So there are far more things out there than our puny little five senses can tell us. And through the out-of-body experience, that's tapping into that sixth or seventh area. And the experience brings on a knowing. It's not about belief, because I wasn't a believer. Believe me, I wasn't a believer at all. I didn't buy into any of this stuff. But through the experiences, it has changed my awareness, and it has let me know that I put the whole kit and caboodle, I bet the farm on what the five senses were telling me, and I was wrong.
Bet the farm. Well, look, I fail to understand how you can believe in a creator, mm-hmm. how you can believe in angelic beings,
mm-hmm.
And the basic goodness of all that is, without belief. There's a yin, there's a yang, there's a good, there's a bad, there's a creator, there's probably an enemy of the creator. I mean, why wouldn't all of that follow that if there's one, there would be the other? Because in every other aspect of life, or even what we know about death, there is both.
Right.
So.
Well, you know, the thing we make a mistake on is we compare the non-physical reality with the physical. So we figure these are the things we have in the physical world, so it must be across the board. Well, the thing is that so far, everything that we've created here is especially the negative things, none of that exists on the other side at all. There is so much peace. There's so much love. There's no manipulation. There's no control.
I interviewed a really interesting psychic named Beverly Jaggers.
Mm-hmm.
And she has done what I always ask. If you can travel with your soul, you and I have talked about it, you can travel in time, forward in time, mm-hmm. behind in time.
Right.
Present, whatever, right?
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, look at the volatile NASDAQ reaching new highs every day. If you knew what was going to go up 30% tomorrow mm-hmm. or next week, you wouldn't have to be writing books about soul traveling.
Mm-hmm.
You'd be playing the market and winning.
And that's when I was, and remember I said about that snowball rolling downhill?
Yeah.
Guided?
Yeah.
Well, if it were not guided, then that probably would be something that I would have found out a long time ago. Especially with all the trials and horrors and the hell that my life has I've gone through the last 3 years, believe me, I was looking for my guide, for this being that's around me to tell me what was around the corner before I got there, because I really wanted to know. But he didn't do that, because I needed to go through these experiences to flex my own particular faith muscles. I can tell you this, as a result of all these negative things that have happened to me, I am truly a better and stronger person, physically and mentally and spiritually. So those things had to happen so that I could get to this state, and I wouldn't trade this state for anything in the world.
Okay, well, so you're absolutely sure then that you're now better physical.
Definitely.
And
definitely, Art.
Spiritual being.
And more at peace than I've ever been in my life.
At peace and starting to make money and everything, right?
I'm surviving.
Books a hit.
I'm surviving.
And so I say, once again, how can you be sure that this angelic being that had something to do with all this, you know, that you don't know it?
And
you
know,
the old expression about no free lunch, right?
After the break, if that were true, you'd be a part of it, and I'll share that.
Oh, great. All right. Well, we'll be right back.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from March 1st, 2000.
Is alive, yeah. They lived a night who wasn't quite as bold as a knight should be. He rode an old gray mare compass, searching for a damsel in distress, just to see if he could set her free. See the knight in rusty armor ride to her aid. Trusty sword is hanging at his side with a rusty blade. Up the tower steps he sneaked, but as he moved his rusty armor squeaked, such a mournful note. And all the sentries at their post thought it.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from March 1st, 2000.
Ah, good morning, everybody. Dr. Albert Taylor is here, and he's talking about out-of-body experiences, and I'm giving him a hard time. Not because we don't. Actually, we agree on more than we disagree on. In other words, I know I've done it. You can definitely leave your body. I just think there may be more possibilities with regard to end destinations than Al does. That's all.
I can't guess how they still got married and had twins. They came in tins. Every suit of armor ever made has a kink. Chainmail pants with a missing link.
All right, once again, Dr. Albert Taylor, who's a really good sport. Albert, you're back on. Hi.
Definitely.
You can understand then, can't you, when before I talk to you, when I saw Soul Traveler 2 to Hell and Back coming out in summer of 2001, I thought, he's found out.
And, you know, and I picked that topic, that subtitle, for a very good reason, because I am going to talk about, in that book, and I'm probably getting way ahead of my publisher's going to call me tomorrow and tell me I should be talking about the paperback coming out in April. But the reason I picked that subtitle is because in the astral plane, there are areas that you can experience what people would probably consider to be a hell.
Oh.
But it's not Lucifer's hell. It's not something that is always there.
Well, then what
like
is
that.
It? God's hell?
It's more of a and see, we can't talk about you experiencing that through the out-of-body experiences versus when you die.
Right.
Those are kind of two different areas.
Right.
Because when you die, what happens is the first thing you have, and you don't usually have this during the out-of-body experience, is you have the panoramic past life review. And that's where you see how you've affected and made everyone feel that you've ever encountered in your life. Now,
yeah, that's some hell for you.
Yeah, tell me about it. Now, can you imagine Hitler's panoramic past life review?
No.
Or Jeffrey Dahmer or something like that?
No.
To me, that would be hell. Because I don't know, since there's no time, I don't know what the duration of experiencing that level of, you know, of hostility and violence and
whatever.
Well,
you don't honestly believe Dahmer sprouted wings, do you?
No, I don't think so. But
well, so
I would hope not. That's not how you get them.
So then he's in Dahmerville, right? Which is synonym for...
I would say he's at the extreme low vibrational level of the astral plane. Extremely low.
Extremely low.
Yeah,
well,
like Robert Monroe talked about in his book, where people were obsessed with the material world and things like that. I would say that is probably where he is, because that type of behavior in the physical body is not going to elevate your particular vibrational rate of your soul. So,
I have this feeling that we're fooling with words. I mean, a very low or even ultra low vibrational level.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what do we think's going on at this extremely low vibrational level?
Well, let's say it's like that's where the kindergartners are. That's where the repeaters or the young souls reside until they realize what Earth life is really for, and that Earth life is really a school, and Earth life is here to help the individual to evolve and become self-aware. And when you you get closer to that kind of thing, like waking up spiritually, then it definitely dictates your behavior, and you can increase your vibrational rate at higher levels, even beyond the astral plane. So that's kind of what we're talking about. We're not talking about some place for eternal damnation. And another thing is, you know, through these experiences, I truly believe in reincarnation for a lot of reasons. And it's very difficult to believe in reincarnation and hell at the same time.
So there would be no such thing then as an eternal low vibration location.
Not if you believe in reincarnation. I mean, that's a place to maybe regroup and reassess your recent experience here on Earth, but it's not a home, and you're coming back to, because the goal here is, what is the meaning of life, is that we come here to evolve in one way or another. That never changes. So just because the body dies doesn't mean that mission is over, and wherever you got, that's where you're stuck at.
How do you feel about the death penalty?
Oh, wow. You know, I'm glad you mentioned that, Art, because I have been getting letters from inmates on death row, and one of them I was trying to communicate with recently was an individual who was executed about 3 weeks ago.
Yes.
In Texas.
Yes.
His name was Larry Robeson.
Yes.
He was also on 48 Hours. You know, that's a tough one, because spiritually, I don't believe we're supposed to do that, but I understand what the government is doing. They're trying to protect the masses from someone they feel is incurable. So I understand that. I don't know. I couldn't criticize it unless I could come up with a better solution.
So what do you end up telling somebody like that before they go get the shot?
That oh, God. Art, the questions I get.
Do you tell them that they're going to a life review? Do you tell them they're going to a vibrational state that may be lower and that they can... You know.
Well, one of the things I don't tell them unless they start asking me questions, because I really don't want to preach or even give anybody any impression that I do try to preach my beliefs at all. Generally, I can tell you this: the questions that I get from these people on death row,
yeah,
are questions that we should ask, each and every one of us should ask, independent of a crime or something.
Like what?
You know, like what did I do in other, like this one question came from a guy, what did I do in other lives that brought me to this point that I needed to commit murder or hurt this individual? Because what he says, and it said it to me in his letter, was after the actual crime was committed, he felt as if he watched someone else do it, and now he was someone different and very remorseful. So he couldn't understand that what was guiding him to make this, to create, you know, to commit this heinous act.
You and I, okay. You and I might have very different explanations for that.
Very true, very true. But this is some of the questions that I get. Or what will happen to me right after I take they inject me with this chemical and I leave the body for the last time,
mm-hmm,
or I leave my body? What will happen to me?
And what do you say?
Well, first of all, the panoramic past life review is kind of pretty much the way it's the norm. I mean, that's almost 95%. Whatever individuals he's hurt in that life, and even it could go on for generations. If you hurt one person and they go out and hurt another person, and then their child does, and on, you get to experience all of that.
But,
so that's what I share with them.
Okay,
that,
but you seem to imply that the deed, when it was done, was done outside the realm of this person's normal spiritual existence.
Well,
I mean, that's what your statement.
That's
what your statement sounded like.
Mm-hmm. This is the question that they're asking me. Is that they
then if that's true, why would they then be held karmically responsible for that?
Well, I don't think that is true necessarily. I think everything we do, we're not passengers. We initiate action. Karma, the definition of karma is action. It could be positive or negative action. Karma itself is not a negative thing. So we have free will, and because of whatever weaknesses we may have, desires, wants, or whatever, we can sacrifice those actions, and instead of doing the right thing, we can try, because of those motivations, we can act negatively. So that's something that we hold total responsibility for. And just because an individual feels differently now after they've committed a heinous crime or an act doesn't mean that now I'm shrugging off all responsibility and I, you know, the devil made me do it, like Flip Wilson used to say.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like that at all. And
kind of made it sound that way because you said that it was like they were watching themselves.
This is what,
from afar.
Not from afar necessarily. More like they felt differently after the act. Like as if someone else did it, even though they have the memories. Now, I'm not saying, and this is just the questions. It has nothing to do with my beliefs or what I share with them. These are just the questions that I've gotten, how they felt.
All right, there's a million people who want to talk to you.
Okay.
I've got a line, you know, bank full of lines here.
Okay.
So I better do some of that. I could occupy your time all night long. First time caller line, you're on the air with Albert Taylor. Hello.
Hello. I just had a question and a comment.
Yep.
Question. If you think that out-of-body experience is so great and that, you know, existence on this earth is on a physical body is negative...
I didn't say that, but go on.
Well, that's kind of what you're implying.
Well, you did say, Albert, that being on Earth is the closest thing to what you would think of as a hell. You said
some of the experiences can be, yes, but I don't consider my life a complete hell.
Okay.
I had some hellish experiences.
Well, that may be because you made a good deal, but go ahead, caller.
I just want to make sure I get to make my observation after my question.
Yep.
Continuing on, if that's the case, then why do you bother to come back into your physical form? Why are you so scared to leave it permanently?
Well, like I said, if that's the impression I gave you, my life is not a hell, and I don't think anyone's whole life is a hell. I think there's hellish experiences and negative experiences, but because that will pass, that doesn't mean that you should cash in your chips at all.
Okay,
so what? There's a reason why we're here.
Okay.
Everyone can change. Everyone can contribute. There's truly a reason why we are here, and I would come back, if nothing else, to assist as many people as I possibly can to try to discover their own self-awareness.
Let me make an observation, if I can.
Sure.
My background is from a born-again belief, and I've seen enough people who are possessed with the devil to know that what you see is nothing more than the spiritual actuality of demon dealing with demons. And one day, believe me, you will find that out. Have a good day.
Well, see, you didn't want to debate that. So one of these days, what you've been seeing as this friendly little Casper guy is going to look more like something that was in Alien with the jaws and the dripping stuff.
Well, that's where you come in, Art, and maybe this is a good time to tell you how you, if that is true, then you're a part of this.
All right.
You ready for this?
Yeah, sure. What the hell?
Okay. When I was sitting on that bed with all those eviction notices and all of that,
yep.
I knew. I said to my guide or to this, whatever you want to call this being, I said, you know what? I never believed in you. And I was sitting in a room talking to, you know, by myself, talking aloud because I truly believe that they hear me.
Yes.
I said, I never believed in you. I didn't come looking for you. You came looking for me. I was satisfied in the life that I had as an aerospace engineer.
Yeah.
I said, so if you truly, and I've always felt this, if you truly want me to do this, this thing, then I need a miracle.
Yeah, I see it coming.
And then, you see it coming.
Sure.
So, I mean, I went to bed, and I got up the next morning, and I went to my computer, and I opened my email, and I'm just scanning through the email because I knew American Online was going to cut off in about a week. There was one email in there from an individual, and the email said, my name is Arbel, call me. I opened up the email and there was a phone number. I thought it was a joke. I called this phone number and there was a guy who answered the phone who sounded just like you, Art. I was convinced it was you. And that was less than 24 hours after this prayer. that, and I said to you, you told me that you got a fax. I later found out that that woman in Fresno that got up and interrupted my lecture that one time was the woman that sent you a fax. I spent my last few pennies on going on that tour. And I'm glad I did, because I never would have met that woman. She never would have faxed you. You never would have IM'd me, emailed me. I never would have called you. That day you said, you asked me to be on your show, and I said, how long? You said an hour. We ended up doing the whole five-hour show.
That's right.
The next few weeks, my book went ballistic, and it changed my life for the better. So you are definitely a part. I just don't know what part you are or who's your mentor.
Well, then I've got a little story for you.
Okay.
In the middle of the night one night, long ago, there was a dark entity with red glowing eyes that came to me, foot of my bed. Now, this was before I checked my email. And it said, I've got a deal with this guy, and you got to help me out, Mel. Check your email. Then he walked right through the wall. I'm just kidding. All right.
I wish you hadn't told me that. That changes all of my
plans. Yeah, that's right. Wild Card Line.
Call it now.
Wild Card Line, you're on the air with Dr. Albert Taylor.
Hey, Art. It's Wayne from Portland.
Hello.
Did that entity have leathery feet as well?
Yeah, and they were cold, too.
Albert, I've enjoyed every one of your visits with Art, and I'd love to hear you guys go at it.
Thank you.
You intrigued me, though, in the first part of the interview. You spoke of what you were going to say that you thought angels really were.
Uh-huh.
Like, I'd be interested, is that what we're going to become, or do you want to give that definition now? I'd like to know what that might be.
Sure. Well, I started having encounters with this thing that I guess people call it a being of light. When my first encounters terrified me. When it spoke to me, everything it was rippled through me. And the one thing that really bothered me more than anything is I felt emotionally naked. Like it knew every little secret, every little part of me, crevice that in the real world, nope, I could hide from people. After I got past my fears of running from this thing, I began to accept it as maybe a spiritual guide or maybe some type of being of an angelic nature sent from a source or a creator, a god of some sort. And then as I began to really become very close to this, because I truly, truly have a wonderful relationship with this thing, I realized that it wasn't this, you know, speaking in these and thous and thou shalt and all that type of thing. It started sounding a lot more like I would sound if I were highly evolved, let's say. It had a sense of humor, which really caught me by surprise, and I wrote about this in my paperback that's coming out in April, in the epilogue. When I was on my way to Greece, I had an experience with this thing. I was in New York that really changed my concept of what it was, and it was because of something it said to me that it dawned on me, I mean, beyond a shadow of a doubt, oh my God, that's something I would say. Not that he said something like me, I would say that.
All right, hold it right there. That's your answer, caller. We'll be right back. From the high desert, this is Coast to Coast AM.
Albert Taylor. It's Albert Taylor. You want to contact him in your email now.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time, on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from March 1st, 2000.
Yeah.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from March 1st, 2000.
For all I've said, the truth of the matter is I know it's possible to leave your body because I've done it. So, a little advice from me. Get out a paper and a pencil and we'll tell you Soul Traveler, the book, is virtually an instruction manual on how to do this. A lot of you I know have been close to it. Some of you have already done it. Some of you are terribly fearful of it. You put me in that category. But the fact of the matter is, it is absolutely real, and this book will tell you how to do it. So if you want to know how to travel outside your body, get a paper and a pencil ready. We're about to tell you how it's done, how you can get the book. Now, we take you back to the night of March 1st, 2000, on Art Bell, Somewhere in Time.
By the way, re-qualifying with all I've said, even though I know it's possible to leave your body, I'm still not convinced that there may not be a negative aspect to it, but I know it is possible, and truthfully, most people do report good experiences. All that said, the book Soul Traveler is the key to figuring out how to do it. And that's Al's book, and I presume you can probably get it at Amazon.com. Is that true?
Yes, definitely. You can. Matter of fact, you can go to either your website or my website at www.albertaylor.com.
Do I have a link up to that yet?
Yes, you do.
Okay, good.
And there's a link to Amazon.com, and you can get it there. Barnes & Noble, Borders, it's still nationwide at all the major chains.
I know, but boy, when you get it in Amazon, they give you a 30% off.
That's true. And you know, Art, the thing about it, and I really like to add this, is it's not about book sales to me, because my book is also in the New York Library, the L.A. Library, so you don't have to buy my book. You can go check it out for free. I'm really interested about getting this information out there for people to use it.
I recognize
how you get
that
it is up to you.
I know. I know you sincerely are. I know you are. And I know this is real. I just have those nagging concerns. Leaving your body is such a serious thing to do.
Well, caution is I think that's something that is a smart and to be skeptical even, is something that I did. So I wouldn't imagine anyone should just dive wholeheartedly into this, because there are some people who would steer you wrong. There were some people who would take your money and promising to teach you how to do it. So there's a lot of things that you should exercise caution and learn as much as you can about it. And then as you explore it, it's kind of like riding a bicycle. You become comfortable, then you can take off the training wheel.
Yeah. Now, I understand all that, and your book does explain how to do it,
mm-hmm.
and it beats reinventing the wheel. So, how much is your book, Soul Traveler?
I think, God, it's been a while since it's on the web. It's, the paperback is coming out in April. It's $8 on Amazon.com.
All of $8?
All of $8. It's a good deal. It has an epilogue that brings it up to date that I just finished writing a few months ago.
Oh, no kidding.
Mm-hmm, that I added to it, which is, it talks about the new book also, To Hell and Back, in it. The old hardback is still available, soon to not be available as soon as the paperback hits.
So in other words, people would be actually wise if they can get the hardbound edition to grab that, because it's not going to be around.
Exactly. It's not going to be around soon. I'm not exactly sure because Dutton is the publisher, but it's still available on Amazon.com. I think it's about $19 or something like that.
A lot of people, Al, who are having these precursor symptoms to an out-of-body experience, are going to want to either read your book or talk to you. So you do have an email address.
Yes, yes.
You want to give it out?
Okay, sure, definitely. They can write me, and I answer all my email. You can either go to my web at alberttaylor.com, or you can write me at soltrav, as in Victor, L-E-R, at AOL.com. And I answer all of my email. It just takes me a little while.
S-O-L, Soul Traveler, at AOL.com.
That's it. That's it. And I answer all my email. I just have to be patient because your show, you have so many wonderful listeners out there that they really rally when you support someone. So it just takes me a while to get to them.
But you will.
Oh, definitely.
Well, you're doing better than I am.
Well, 100%. I answer everyone individually. Because no one else can really, I don't give it to another person to do the job because no one else can really understand and share the information that these people are really asking for.
That's my same problem with email. It's just that I have been forced into this horrendous corner, and I want everybody to know that, by the way, where I get like 1,200 maybe a day, 1,300, that's maybe on an average day,
right.
and there's no way I would need two other lifetimes.
Right.
And I can't turn my email over to anybody else, and I don't.
Right.
I read all my email headers, at least. And, you know, I kind of do a triage system.
I do that.
Is radically important. And
I do that, too.
There's no choice. There wouldn't be enough hours in
right.
a day.
I do that, too. I'm about 2 months behind right now.
Yeah.
But there are some, like I have this one woman who has breast cancer who wrote me, and she's inquiring about what's, you know, going to happen to her and what can she expect. People like that, I respond right away. I've gotten some people who are suicidal. I respond immediately to them, and I refer them to someone that can help them. So I do a triage kind of thing also.
All right. Phones. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Dr. Albert Taylor. Hi.
Hello?
Hello.
Oh, hi.
Hi there. Where are you, Prady?
I am in Chicago.
Chicago. All right.
Right. Okay. A real honor. I'd like to share an experience with you.
Fire away.
Sure.
And specifically, I'd like to ask Dr. Taylor, I'd like to get his take on this to see if, to determine whether it wasn't indeed an out-of-body experience or whether it was a dream. And basically, about 4 months ago, I had this out-of-body experience, or whatever it was, ironically enough, while I was listening to your show, because I tend to go to sleep to your show. So I'm in bed.
I get that all the time.
So, I mean, it could very easily have been a dream. And it was very intense. It was more intense than most dreams. So so basically, I'm in my room, lights are out, I'm listening to your show. I guess I'm drifting off to sleep because my next conscious thought is very exhilarating, drifting up and off to the right of my bed. Now, I look back towards my bed, and I'm seeing basically the room as I saw it when I went to sleep. Dark, and this is pretty cool. I'm hearing the audio from your show, and ironically enough, it was about out-of-body experiences. So I don't know how much that influenced this. But, yeah, I'm drifting off and up to the right of my bed, and I'm looking back, and it was very exhilarating. And
could you see yourself?
Not clearly. This is something that's kind of, I was so caught up in actually in the motion away from the bed.
Now right. That I understand.
Right.
And I was so, I mean, you're very much aware of this, and Art, I mean, you must have really felt quite an exhilarating physical sensation when you were up over Paris,
yes,
right?
Yes, yes. So and, absorbed into it that I really didn't attention to what was down below. I knew I was up there.
Right.
Exactly.
But it was far from the most important thing. I was just astounded.
Right. It's tough to be a scientist during the experience.
Yeah.
And basically, this only lasted a couple seconds because I got up to about the ceiling, and I started to drift back down a little bit faster than I drifted up. And when I kind of went through the floor, but then I'm back in my bed, okay? Mm-hmm. And,
well, it wasn't like a Roadrunner cartoon where they run off the cliff and then he's running in midair and realizes he's off a cliff and then, phew!
Yeah, it's like, so I know I'm back in bed, or maybe I don't know, but the next feeling is I'm flat on my back, my eyes are closed at this point, I'm not seeing anything at this point, but I'm flat on my back and my arms are outstretched, directly, straight up, and they're frozen. I cannot move my arms, and they're, I'm certain
your
that they're straight up above me. What's that?
Your physical arms?
No, my arms.
Yeah, but are we talking physical or astral?
Oh, I have no idea. No, physically, I feel that my arms.
Right, but you didn't
are
see your arms. You
out
felt them
in front of me.
You didn't see them, did you?
No,
you
I can't. I'm not seen at this point.
Okay, because it could have been. See, your astral arms and your physical—they feel the same. Until you look and see, then you'll realize, oh my God, I'm controlling something else. So it may probably, I would say, or probably your astral arms or your second body, as Robert Moreau would call it. Because that usually that's what happens to me is those arms and those legs of that second body are the first ones to start floating upward or dislodging
this
or dislocating
that,
or disassociating with the physical body.
Yeah, this is one of the things that kind of led me to believe that it could very well have been an out-of-body experience. Because when I started exploring, when I started to try to figure out slowly what was going on with my body, I was moving my fingers, and this is very slowly, very gradual, but when I moved my fingers and finally I had control of my arms, they were flat down next to me on the bed, not above me.
Makes perfectly good sense. Classic OBE.
Oh, boy, that's really something.
Yeah.
Wow.
I even mentioned the little finger trick in my book on how to reconnect, and that's all part of it. It's interesting that you discovered that on your own.
Okay, final answer, OBE.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Dr. Albert Taylor. Hi.
Hi, Al. Hi, Art.
Hello.
Oh, this is great. make a short experience and find out what Al's take on this is. 15 months without electricity, most of the time no gas, several times no water, and house in foreclosure. Had an awful dream one night, and in this dream, in the upper left-hand corner, if you were watching a TV screen, a person appeared, and I know who the person was, dressed in all kind of like beige, holding something in one hand, and one hand outstretched towards me, and a very, very beatific smile on her face. And this happened once before, but I did not validate it. This, the second time I did, told people about it. 4 days later, I received confirmation that a loan that I had applied for came through, and my life is now back in order. I call her a watcher. Does that make sense?
Watcher, guide, definitely makes sense. Each one of us has this thing that is looking out for our well-being, kind of like we're the kids playing in a sandbox and the teacher is standing over the yard making sure we don't hurt ourselves. Every one of us, I didn't believe it, but everybody who's had these kind of beyond the physical experiences reports a presence or some being of some sort being there.
But something that you would more likely call an angel or a watcher.
I would say that, because I don't think of it as
words.
A ghost or a deceased person.
These are just words, not somebody who has been on Earth previously, right?
Right, correct.
So like a used soul dealer.
Correct.
Yeah, this person had died a rather unfortunate death, and I have been very unhappy about her death for a long time, and I all of a sudden feel a lot better now.
That you know she has not just ceased to exist.
Right.
Right.
Okay.
Right. And you will not cease to exist. That's what's so wonderful about the out-of-body experience. It gives you a glimpse of your immortality.
Oh, wow. Okay, well, thank you very much.
All right, thank you, ma'am. Take care. And first time caller line, you're on the air with Dr. Albert Taylor. Hi. Hello?
Hello?
Yes, you're on the air.
Hi, Art.
Yes,
sorry about that.
Where are you?
I'm in Boston.
Okay.
Excuse me?
I said hello.
Oh, hi. How are you, Mr.
Pretty Taylor? Good.
It's been an interesting show, as usual, Art. You guys have been touching on a lot of stuff that directly impacts my ever-changing world view. the truth behind the entire paranormal field and the truth behind the ET UFO phenomenon is also crucial to my world view. But astral projection and the things that you're talking about tonight are kind of interesting to me because I've had several people close to me tell me about some things that I'm fairly skeptical of. And in particular, I've also talked to some remote viewers who ultimately didn't convince me, but they said some really interesting things, but I still remain skeptical of the whole thing. But instead of getting to all that and instead of debating a lot of, I come from an ex-Protestant background, so I really, I enjoyed your joke, Art, about how do you know you're not being bamboozled by an entity. But instead of getting into
I was not totally joking about that at all. I mean,
I kind of laugh, you know, I was laughing along, but it was one of those half nervous, half serious kind of laughs. You know,
yeah.
It's like, it's, I describe it as like having lost my faith about 3 years ago, but.
Al's best shot was making me part of it, which sobered me up a little bit.
Yeah, actually, I mean, you've had past guests on before, like, I found the show with John Hogue really, really interesting because I'm not into Nostradamus or anything like that, but some of the things the two of you are revealing about your background, about his ex-Protestant background, and it was like, I'm like, they understand, you know, it was like there's that nervousness, like you're an agnostic, you're in the middle ground, but you're just not sure what to believe. And instead of talking about like all kinds of Christian notions of like supernatural or satanic conspiracy theories, which we could talk about all night, because, in fact, a lot of what Mr. Taylor was saying tonight, some of these new agey type messages do jibe well with a lot of the conspiracy theories that I was kind of taught, you know, back in my Christian days, things about how, you know, Satan, you know, would love to get people to believe
that. Sure. Of course it jibes.
Yeah, about how, you know, the greatest trick he could pull would be to get people to believe that he doesn't exist, or even things like, you know, not fearing death, because if you don't fear death, then you don't worry about this eternal rewards and punishments and all that kind of stuff.
Yep.
And you know, we could talk about...
All right, stuff. Well, let's separate this a little bit for a second. Now, Al, having an out-of-body experience as such, a generic OBE, in other words, rising out of your body, maybe like the guy was talking about here on the phone a little while ago, being above the bed, that would not necessarily lead you to believe, suddenly stop fearing death, lead you to believe that there is an existence after death, because you would have to conclude logically in your own mind that insofar as that experience was concerned, it's a function of a normal human living brain.
Right. No, that didn't convince me at all.
Nothing
leaving
more.
Leaving the body and moving around the room, that is not what did it.
But what did apparently do it was the meeting with this entity?
Well, that plus on, like I said, July of 1993, I had that, and some people call it a Kundalini experience. I didn't know what it was. All I knew is all of a sudden my limited awareness that I thought was really broad was expanded so much and affected me so profoundly. I had this, and this is the best way I can describe it, Art, I knew beyond a shadow of a doubt I was home.
Yeah.
I knew it, and I still do.
Yeah.
That's what really did it for me. I knew that's where I originally came from, and to answer the caller as far as not fearing death, what it has done is I know beyond a shadow of a doubt that when this body dies, I'm going to be accountable for the life that I've lived. So it makes me very, very much aware of everything I do. I don't take anything I do for granted because I truly know that I'm going to have to answer to somebody, if not to my higher self, on how I live this life. So it to me, and I wasn't a religious person at all, in any way, shape, or form. This has really affected me regarding something beyond just me.
All right. I've got one more hour of show ahead of me, and you're welcome to stay on if you're awake enough.
My pleasure.
Really?
You know how this energizes me.
I do, actually. All right. The book, folks, Amazon.com is where you can get, 30% discount. It's called Soul Traveler. You can go look it up. It's linked on my website right now. Or you can email Dr. Albert Taylor at Soul Traveler. That's S-O-L-S-O-L Traveler, common spelling, at AOL.com. Soul Traveler at AOL.com. Or by all means, trust me when I tell you, get this book. And you will be able to do this. Now, you may want to decide whether you want to do it beforehand. That's a decision that's all yours. But I'm telling you it can be done. And I'm telling you, this book will teach you how to do it. It's up to you.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from March 1st, 2000. Networks presents Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight's program originally aired March 1st, 2000.
This hour is all you and Al Taylor. We're going to stick to the phones as much as possible because I know you have very serious questions about OBEs, out-of-body experiences. That's what we're talking about. And they are real. They absolutely are real. I'm just not exactly sure what they are and what they aren't. And that's what we've been talking about tonight. But Al, he's pretty sure. He wrote the book on it. He'll be right back. Back to the lines we go, and line one, you're on the air with Albert Taylor. Good morning.
Hello.
Hello.
Good morning.
Yes, good morning, Art Bell and Albert Taylor. I've been wanting to tell my out-of-body experience for the last 22 years since it first occurred to me.
Tell it.
Oh, shoot.
And one night, I was visiting my sister, and we went to bed. We weren't drinking or anything. We were up late talking. And I went to bed and laid on my right side in the fetal position. Well, all of a sudden, I got a lot of visions in my head of my whole life. Nothing negative, just the happy things that happened in my life. Mm-hmm. Almost like snapshots.
Interesting.
And all of a sudden, I was above the bed. And I looked down, and I saw my body, and I said, oh, my God, I'm dead. And I was floating around the room, and I made the motion to bring the hands in front of my face, and there were no hands. I said, my God, there's no hands. But I made that motion. And I said, what a feeling this is. I said, this is such a fantastic feeling. I love it. I said, I'm going to go visit my friend. And I was floating towards the window, wanting to leave, when all of a sudden I felt a massive tug on my body. I made the motion to turn around, and I saw my body, and it was coming closer and closer, and I tried to fight it.
Right.
I tried to get away because the feeling was so good. And my body got closer and closer and closer. I didn't go in through the head or anything. I just merged with my body, and my eyes opened, and I said, what the heck was that? And that was the last time I had it, and I've been trying to recreate that experience since then, and I have never been able to do it. But because of that experience, I do believe in life after death.
There you go. That's awesome. Yeah, that was a great experience. The body has this automatic recall thing, so no matter how much you want to fight it, someone, you know, I'm in the grassy knoll, Art, I was telling you. Someone
right.
asked me how what's the longest that I've ever stayed out of body.
Right.
And 3 hours is tops because I've tried longer, but the body keeps, it has this recall thing where it pulls you back no matter if you want to stay out or not.
But
so
what's
you don't
strange?
Have to worry about being trapped outside.
Right.
When you see the body, it's almost like a vacuum cleaner. It just sucks you right back in.
It did, and I tried to fight it. But what was strange, I did not see a silver cord that so many people talk about.
Right. I have never seen the silver cord, and I have purposely looked for it. I'm not saying that it doesn't exist, but I haven't been able to perceive it. Now, you got to think about this. You're not looking with your eyes either.
Right, right.
So we're not talking about
everywhere.
Light waves hitting the retina. We're talking about perception. So
yeah,
you can, yeah. And perception is like tuning a radio. You can be off the station a little bit, or you could be right on.
Wow, but it was, what about the visions? Is that something that's normal?
Definitely.
I mean, the visions
I mean,
of my
any,
life?
Almost anything. And what you described, it rarely happens, because what you're talking about is borderline what someone experiences in the near-death experience, almost like a panoramic view. You
right.
only experience
right.
positive things, which is great, but a lot of people talk about the Akashic records, and that's
right.
supposed to be a record that of everything we've ever done in this life and any other existence, and I truly believe that you can get glimpses of this at a super state of consciousness, and that may be exactly what happened to you and what you did experience.
Fantastic.
But it was enough to jog you out of that that world where you didn't really believe or even understand that there was something more. Now you have this little spark that's burning that you can't help but, you know, fan the flames.
All right, we lost him at the end there, but I'm sure he caught what you had to say.
Yeah.
Wild Card Line, you're on the air with Dr. Albert Taylor. Hi.
Good morning, Art. Albert.
Good morning.
This is John in Atlanta. I think the Bible says that we must die daily. Maybe that's what it means. We should transcend our bodies. Maybe we should experience
this. You know, it's interesting that you would say that, because to me, going to sleep is like dying a little bit every day. Because we definitely go into almost a comatose state. And a lot of things, if you read the Bible, a lot of people have had incredible visions and dreams and angel visitations during dreams. Joseph, the father, Mary's husband, had dreams of what he needed to do. So, yeah, I think in a way we need to die a little bit every day. And hopefully if we can reconnect with our spirit, maybe just a little bit of a time, a little dose every day, then it'll affect how we live in our waking state and how we treat one another.
I think it also says after death comes judgment, what Danny and Brinkley describes as panoramic life review sounds an awful lot like judgment.
It is an awful lot like judgment. Sure.
Well,
it is.
You think about it this, though. This is what I think is one is really interesting about the near-death experience panoramic life review, is that the judgment doesn't appear to be coming from anyone external to you. It comes from you within looking at yourself, which is tougher than anything. Because
sure
you realize what you've, with the mistakes and errors that you've made.
Sure, but that may be where God is. You know,
that's true.
Inside all of
that's
us.
That's true. I think there's a part of us that knows the truth and is pure. And be, like I said, because of the personality, the earthbound personality, the five senses and the ego, that kind of contaminates it a little bit and causes us to do things contrary to what our soul would want us to do.
Right. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Dr. Albert Taylor. Hi.
Good morning, Art.
Good morning,
Dr. Taylor.
Good morning.
Oh, you're a little hard to hear, so you're going to have to yell at us. Where are you?
I'm in Philadelphia.
Okay.
I hope this morning finds you as well as it does me.
Good.
And, actually, first off, listening to your biography, I wanted to say, you remind me of, like, an older version of myself, because
wait a minute,
true
now, I'm not that old. Go on.
I'm only 20 myself.
Okay.
So I can guarantee you're older because you got like two doctorates. But my question is, like, since this is a topic that's always intrigued me, is it possible that you could give us like a few tips of how to accomplish
our
body experience?
Sure.
You betcha. All right.
My pleasure.
Just listen. We should do that on every program, and I guess we do. So here is that moment.
Okay. The most valuable piece of information that I can possibly offer you, and it works for me 8 out of 10 times, which is about 80%, is what I found is that normally, see, this has been happening to me naturally since I was 5. So what I did is I didn't try to have an out-of-body experience. I tried to find out why I was having out-of-body experiences. And what I found out that I had more out-of-body experiences on nights that I didn't sleep all the whole night through, that I didn't go into a deep, deep, deep sleep.
Mm-hmm.
So what I decided, I found that I would have them a lot when I, like, I would go to bed at night and then wake up with a little bit of insomnia around 1 o'clock and then stay up for a little while, then go back to bed. And within a half hour to an hour after going back to bed, that's when I would have these experiences. So what I did is I set my alarm clock one night to wake up about 1:30 in the morning. I woke myself up. I got out of the bed. I listened to art, which almost put me back to sleep. No, I'm just kidding. I listened to art. Never attack the host, right?
It's all right. I came after you all night long.
I set my alarm. I stayed up for about an hour or two. Then I went back to sleep, and I laid there perfectly still. Now, what I found out is that the physical body still requires about 2 to 4 more hours of sleep. And if you lay perfectly still, it will fall asleep by itself. Just like if you've been really tired while driving down the highway, and no matter how you try to concentrate, you nod out just for a brief second. Well, this, you're doing this in a very controlled and safe place, like laying in your bed, and the body will fall asleep. Now, what happens, though, because you've interrupted the sleep pattern, the consciousness, or the soul awareness, if you want to call it that, stays very, very alert. So when the body falls asleep, that's when you usually, people report, finding themselves in that night paralysis state. So I recommend in my book, it also talks about and describes how to do this. It talks about what I call the interrupted sleep technique, and that's where you interrupt your sleep pattern, wake up, and then when you go back to bed, lay perfectly still, and there is an 80% chance that you will truly have an out-of-body experience. Just do not get frustrated.
I have interrupted sleep all the time. I live my life as interrupted sleep, as a matter of fact. And for the most part, the only thing it does for me is cause me to dream like crazy, Albert.
Mm-hmm.
I've never, I've had the warning signs of the beginning of an OBE, but I've really, other than what occurred in Paris, which was unmistakable,
mm-hmm.
the rest of the time it's caused me to just dream like crazy.
Right.
I mean really dream. So it's got me in that state, but...
There's no brick wall to leap over to get to the next state. We're talking about just turning up the awareness. The fact that you're having a lot of dreams that you can remember tells me that you're right on the doorstep of that next level.
Uh-huh.
Your intent has a lot to do with it. If you intend to have one the next time these things are happening, generally you will remember and you may even cause it to happen.
No, I don't intend to. In fact, actually, I want nothing to do with it for the most part, even though my one experience was joyful, incredible, surprising, shocking, amazing. I don't seem to want to try and repeat it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have that desire, Al.
Well, you know what? I think this is how I look at it, Art.
In fact, I dream so damn much that, to me, a little slice of death sounds great. I love it when I go to sleep, and I sleep so soundly, and I wake up really feeling refreshed, like I had a great night's sleep. I wasn't chasing a monster wasn't chasing me, whatever.
Well, I think that one experience you had, because we had shows, did shows before you had that experience.
That's right.
And we've done shows since you've had that experience.
That's right.
And I think that one experience you had was enough to cause the effect that it needed to, and that was that you have pretty much become a vehicle to provide information to people regarding this subject, and you also have supported it by saying, you know what, I didn't believe it, but it happened to me. So whatever it was supposed to do, it did.
Well, maybe you're right. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Dr. Albert Taylor. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. I want to say hi to you. I know I love the show. I listen to you all the time.
Thank you.
And Albert.
Yes, sir.
You know, I used to have out-of-body experience quite a bit. I spent a lot of my time trying to and reading about it.
Mm-hmm.
And in one particular experience, once I realized what they were, I had traveled around and made my way to New York City.
Mm-hmm.
And while I was there, you know, I saw the Statue of Liberty, and I wanted to return to my body. I drifted back towards the direction of California, where I am, and when I got here, I couldn't find myself.
Hmm.
I flew into a state of panic and was sucked back
mm-hmm.
while in panic and just woke up with a start, sweating.
Right.
And I just wondered if you'd ever heard of this before.
Oh, yeah, it happened to me. I couldn't find my way back either.
Really? See, now that's scary.
No, well, because you're going to get recalled anyway. You don't have to find your way back. It's going to happen. You don't have to, but you can. I mean, it's nice. The thing is, the reason I couldn't find my way back is because I didn't know how to focus my thoughts on where my body was.
There is no astral GPS.
No, but you, even if you wanted to stay out and you were totally lost, you're going to be sucked back no matter what anyway.
Okay.
So you don't have to worry about it, because the thing about this art is I've been doing this since I was 5. I just found out about what it was 9 years ago.
Well, that would be reassuring to somebody, I'm sure, but if you're doing it for the first time and you're coming back and you can't find your body...
Do not fear. And I understand that's easy to say, but don't worry. You will return because you have no choice.
All right. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, that's reassuring. I mean, lose your keys or your wallet, that's bad enough.
Yeah.
Lose your body and... It's very traumatic. It's
hard to find
traumatic.
A new one.
Yeah, you can't go down there and fill out a card and get a new one. First
reissue.
Time, yeah, reissue. First time caller line, you're on the air with Albert Taylor.
Hi, Art. This is Andrew from Boston.
Yes.
And I just wanted to let your guests know that I've had a lot of experiences with out-of-body experiences also. And I've seen the figure that he's talking about that's helping him out.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And... it says in the Bible that these figures will come as a figure of light. These are fallen spirits, demons.
Mm-hmm, here we go.
And, yeah, here we go. That's the truth. And it says they come as a spirit of light. They don't come as, you know, this scaly, creepy, crawly figure. And they're here to take us out of our body, to show us these great things and give you all this knowledge. What has it actually done for you that's made you, that's improved you?
Okay, fair question.
Well, I think it's really brought me closer to individuals in a way that I care. I really do.
By leaving your body and going away?
Well, I think it's that awareness of leaving. Now, the thing is that my question to you, though, is that if you believe, you just quoted the Bible, so you must believe in angels, correct?
Yes, absolutely.
My question to you is, would you know an angel if you saw one?
Yeah, because angels come with the Holy Spirit.
Are you sure about that?
Oh, now, wait a minute.
Are you sure about that?
A lot of angels are fallen. What do you mean they come with the Holy Spirit? Not always.
There's two different kinds of angels.
Well, Satan is a fallen angel.
Exactly. And there's the angels that are fallen with him.
Well, if they're going to come and fool you and be full of light and sweet words, then how are you going to know?
I know because...
Because of what?
When you've experienced the power of the Holy Spirit, which comes from God...
Yeah.
There's a difference between that and the creepy crawly feeling you get up the back of your neck when you see one of those in the dark. It's a big difference. And I've never gotten the feeling that I've had when I've experienced the Holy Spirit when I've seen demons. And I see demons often. I can see that. Just like your guests can see things. If you're open to the spirit world, you can see things.
Well,
that's a given.
I understand. You know, and this is the difference between what you're sharing with me and what I'm sharing with you. Is that it's not something I read. It has nothing to do with what someone told me, because I didn't believe in any of this stuff. I'm not what you would say, you're a religious person in any way, shape, or form. I'm a scientist, and that's what I've been for a lot of years. See, and I looked at this as just an experiment, and that's it. I had no idea that it was going to change me spiritually, which it has. It has made me more aware of who I am and brought me closer to the God that I truly, truly believe in. So as a result of that, if you look at they say you will be judged by the fruits of your labor. If you look at the impact that it's had on me, I get letters from a lot of wonderful people who are out there discovering who they really are, and they're using this knowledge to go out and assist other people and to really do things like Danyon, for instance, where he's involved in hospice programs, where he believes that no one should die alone. I can't see that being a negative thing. I've been involved in the hospice, and I've been involved in feeding the homeless. I can't see that as a negative thing.
Of course not.
Maybe someone else could twist it that way.
No.
It's very difficult for me to see it that way.
No, hardly anybody could twist that the wrong way.
So the fruits of your labor, I think, look at that, and that to me says everything. You can believe and fear whatever you want, but I think what you do is really what matters.
All right. Wildcard line, you're on the air with Dr. Albert Taylor.
Hello, Albert. I have to agree with the last caller, and I would take issue of your hospice activities and guiding people
at
the moment of death. Well, I'll tell you this. I have had the same experiences that Art has had. I don't... where I have had the paralysis, the buzzsaw things, every single time since I was born in 1958. I'm 41 and a half years old. And every single time that that has happened to me, and you have seen beings and I have, and the ones that I see are dressed in black robes. And I just have this funny feeling, just like Art does, that it's not quite a friendly place to go to. There are, as Father Malachi Martin says, there is a median world between this and the other side. I don't know where you're traveling, but have you ever seen these
yes.
beings?
I've been in my book about these hooded figures.
Who are they?
Now, the thing, no, my
Yeah, who are they?
I agree.
You
know what? I'll tell you what. I hate to interrupt, but
I'm kind of...
excuse me.
No, stop, and just answer that question. Who are they?
I have not ID'd them yet.
I have speaking wind,
the hooded figures, and I've only seen them once in that I remember.
All right. I want the caller and Al, both of you, just hold on a moment.
All right.
We're at the bottom of the hour, and I don't want to interrupt, so we'll be right back. I'm Art Bell, and this is Coast to Coast AM. Hooded figures. That would not be one fine day.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time, on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from March 1st, 2000.
One fine day, you're gonna want me for your first.
Listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time, on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from March 1st, 2000.
Now, here is an interesting fact. It says, Art, I had an OBE in the middle of the day in a dentist chair. I was quietly trying to do self-hypnosis on myself to keep calm while the dentist worked on me. And I popped out of my body. I was elevated in a corner of the room. I was elated. But at the sight of myself, I popped back. Too bad. That's Gail in Las Vegas. I suppose it's Crystal. I had a lot of it. I know I plumbed the depths of root canals. And if there was ever a time anybody would want to leave their body, that definitely would be it. And I've never managed. I've always felt that little, you know, I don't know if you've ever had a root canal, but even if you've been had good anesthetic, they take this little thing and they don't call it a root canal for nothing. They actually, it's like Roto-Rooter for your gums, you know, after they turn it and twist it. You can feel it going down inside. And then when they think they've got it in far enough, they yank it out. And the root comes out with it. So if ever there was a time to be out of your body, that certainly would be it. Albert Taylor is here, and he'll be right back.
Here's Al Taylor once again, Dr. Al Taylor. And caller, you're back on the line again.
Hello.
Hello. Yes, hi.
Yeah, he was name-dropping Daniel Brinkley about the great work with the hospices and, you know, people feed the poor. But my question was specifically this, that I know, and you have stated this, Art, on your show, that when this sort of event occurs, there's a tremendous amount of fear. And the point is, I have seen, just as your guest...
The hooded...
Hooded, black hooded beings. I have talked to Brad Steiger on your show, and Speaking Wind, and all these people, that these beings are all... seem to be always present there, and I want to ask him, why are these beings present there?
Yeah.
Why is this such a great experience? I don't think it is, and why are you...
I don't think Albert has an answer for that, because he already said that he doesn't understand what these creatures are. Is that roughly right?
Yes, and your caller just made a statement, they're always there. I've only seen them once out of hundreds of times, so they're not always there in my experiences. They've only been there once.
But that might be like being a little bit pregnant.
I don't know. I know that...
In other words, if you've seen them
once...
Let me
say this. Remember when I said I had those fearful experiences in the beginning, and then after I understood what was happening, I didn't?
Right.
Well, they were part of that initial fearful time, and I haven't seen or had any experiences like that since. But I have, you know, and I was shocked that other people were seeing them, because I thought it was just me. But I have heard of other people identify the same thing.
Exactly. So if
just because a person wears a hood doesn't mean that they're a negative thing. I mean, if you look at the old Zorro things with Guy Williams.
I've seen all the movies, and when they got hoods, it's death there to punch your ticket.
Well, look at the friar. I mean, the one in Zorro, he wore a hood. You know, the old, what you call the monks, they also wore hoods.
Oh, yeah,
so, you know, I think it's more of maybe possibly it could be negative, but just because you wear a hood doesn't mean it's negative. Because there are a lot of people who do that.
Mm.
I don't know what it symbolizes. I think it's interesting, but it's only happened once out of 100, so it's in a very, very small percentage of my experience.
All right. That's fair enough. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Dr. Albert Taylor. Hi.
Hi, Art. This is Steve from Windsor, Ontario, Canada.
Yes. Hi, Steve.
I've got a couple of very strange things that happened to me here and a suggestion for music for you. The first thing that happened to me, this is back around 1979, maybe 1980, I was laying down on the floor. I suddenly heard noises coming from my kitchen. I sat up, and I started to call out, "Who's in the kitchen?" I didn't get an answer. I called out again, "Who's in the kitchen?" Then I sort of added an expletive, like, "Who the is in the kitchen?"
Mm-hmm.
All of a sudden, this dark, shadowy figure comes out of the kitchen door towards me with something in its hand.
Probably a kitchen knife.
Scream.
Balancing a pizza, but go on.
Well, I don't know what this was, but I went to scream, and as I did, I sat up into myself.
Mm-hmm.
The second thing that I had happen...
Wait a minute. You sat up into yourself.
I sat up into myself. I actually saw myself whacking into whatever I was already sitting up as.
All right, mm-hmm. Stop right there. What's that, Albert?
Well, his astral body, I've sat up and still occupied half of my physical body also. It's kind of a separation, but you don't move away from the physical body, if that's what I believe he's talking about.
All right.
See, I wasn't sure whether I should be talking to Dr. Taylor or whether I should be talking to Whitley Strieber. The second problem that I had, the second weird happening that I had, we had moved away from the house that this happened in, and we moved into another place. And I was laying down on the bed one night, had a bed couch pulled out watching TV. Well, I decided it's time to go to bed. I closed up the bed couch. I walked up the stairs. I got in bed upstairs. Now, I hear the doorbell ring. The next thing I know, I'm standing beside the bed couch again.
Mm, fascinating.
Something was on my front lawn. There was something parked out on the front lawn. I thought it was a car. And I see these people standing in there looking in my front window. Now, the odd thing is the front window is about 4 feet tall. These heads are looking in maybe about 4.5 feet tall. And I start yelling at them
maybe
to get off my grass.
You should be talking to Whitley.
I'm beginning to think so. I'm not sure whether these things were, you know, like the strange thing was all of a sudden I woke up again. And I'm sitting up in the bed next to my wife, and I'm going, where the hell was I just now?
Mm-hmm. There wasn't any mud on your shoes, was there?
No. Not that I can remember. And for the musical suggestion, or when you get a doomsdayer on there, Eve of Destruction, was it Sergeant Barry Sadler? Or Sandler? I'm not sure the name.
No. I've got it here.
You do have it. Great.
Yeah,
you should use that once in a while.
It's Barry... what was his last name?
Sandler?
Not quite. You're close. It'll come to me. Anyway, all right, sir.
I got to comment a little bit on this.
Go ahead.
Because I really do believe that there has been some abductions from things we can't explain, possibly extraterrestrials or whatever. I do believe that there are some cases like that. I also do believe that some people confuse some of their out-of-body experiences and visitations with abductions. So what you experience, I'm not saying putting it in either category, but it does sound like something that Whitley would talk about. But because of the fact that you said you went to bed and then you realized that you hadn't gone to bed, that sounds like a classic out-of-body experience where when you're in your astral body, it really feels like you're in your physical body. And you'll walk around and you'll even sometimes go into the bathroom as if you're going to use a bathroom. And then all of a sudden you find that you never did any of those things. So yours is borderline, and I would have to know a little bit more about it to really understand it.
All right. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Dr. Albert Taylor. Cheerio.
Good morning, Art. Good morning, Albert.
Hi.
Morning.
You're too kind of weak. You're going to have to yell at us. Where are you?
This is Leonard from Tucson.
All right.
Albert, I have had two partial out-of-body experiences. First time was during the Cuban Missile Crisis, and I was dreaming, and then I saw this light, a flash, and people running, and I was in a catalytic state. And when I popped back into my body, it was only a partial separation. It scared me so bad that I went into my mom and dad's bedroom and stood there for an hour.
Mm-hmm.
I did not know what was going on.
Right.
But it was a stressful time because of the Cuban Missile Crisis.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the second time was 1979. I had had a knee operation. By this time, I'd read a lot of books on out-of-body experiences, Sylvain, Muldoon, everyone. And I was recuperating at home, and my mother was nursing me back to health from the operation. And again, I had another partial out-of-body experience, and I felt like I was being smothered, and I yelled.
Right.
My mother came into the room, said, "What's wrong?" I said, "I just messed up a good possible out-of-body experience."
Right, right.
But anyhow, my point is, okay, I have a lot of health problems now. I am an insulin-dependent diabetic, and I have a lot of hypoglycemic reactions. And I'm afraid of going out of my body and having a hypoglycemic reaction and maybe having a problem with it, because I've had them before,
Well, there's an answer to this one, and I've heard it before, so I know it. If your body were to suddenly become distressed, Albert says...
Yes.
Dr. Albert Taylor.
You would be brought back immediately.
You would be snapped back right away.
Right. It would be like crashing in from the ceiling. But, you know, I can say this clearly, and it's...
Well, you know, Albert, this is the part where I say, yeah, but. a lot of people, you know, you frequently hear the phrase, he died peacefully in his sleep, right?
Uh-huh.
Well, how do you know he died peacefully in his sleep? He was alone. Maybe he woke up and went, ah! Oh, my God! Writhing, terrible pain, but you never know it, and they report later he died peacefully in his sleep. What do they know? Okay, so if you're out of your body and you start having an immediate, you know, terminal condition, then what favor is done by snapping back into that?
I can barely answer that question. All right,
then don't. I mean, it's just something to think about. Don't answer it. First time caller line, you're on the air with Dr. Albert Taylor. Hello.
Oh, God. Hello.
Hello.
You're so funny, Art. You crack me up.
I'm calling from the Midwest.
All right.
And
secret location in the Midwest.
I had a experience in 1991 post-surgery where I thought I woke up, but I don't think I did. I was moving It was through a black tunnel. I was seeing green. I was above myself, but there were no warm fuzzies or good feelings. I was terrified.
Black tunnel story. There you go.
I woke up absolutely screaming.
Right.
But it was like a crash.
Right.
I've heard other people say this. I was moving, and all of a sudden, just this horrible crash, and I was back.
Right.
And I have been scared ever since.
It sounds like you had a classic near-death experience. You said you were in the hospital?
Yeah.
That sounds like a classic near-death experience. Something happened to your physical body.
Yeah, but we're talking black tunnel here, not
right.
Warm, welcome, comforting light with relatives around.
Well, the thing about it is
there
that...
There was no figure anywhere.
What we're really talking about here is your feelings. And this is what I found out. The way I feel doesn't necessarily mean that has to do or that dictates my experience or that the experience is negative. I could feel negative, but it doesn't mean that the experience is because... You know, after a lot of experience, I have to ask you, nothing really happened except you felt that way.
Well,
that's all.
During it, I felt wonderful. The movement was great.
Mm-hmm.
It was coming back, and I was afraid when I got back.
And the fear may have come from a lot of the unknown, because you weren't afraid because something happened. Maybe you were afraid
because you didn't
know what was going to happen.
I was afraid because something didn't.
Right,
there was
no
light. There was nobody there.
There you go. All right, so conversely, my bet would be that you're scared to death of your own mortality now.
You bet
death.
I am.
Well, you know, it's an experience that we have no conscious memory of. So it's very new. We don't know what's going to happen. It's like being on a roller coaster and you're coming to the edge of a cliff. You don't know what's down there, so that's when you start feeling all that exhilaration and that fear. But after many, and I believe me, I was a big scaredy cat. I mean, the first few times I literally jumped out of my bed, I picked up all my covers, and I went into the den and I stayed up all night long. So I understand fear. But after going to that door and checking it out many, many times, I became more relaxed, and I realized that the only negative experience I ever had was the fear that I brought into it.
So it isn't necessarily the reality.
Well, I can only say after a while, and I've taught this to people all over the world. I've been in Greece, you name it, and it's all the same thing. After the people get used to it, it ceases to be a frightening experience.
Because, you know, you hear all these people and everything's so positive and wonderful, and I'm sitting here going, oh, yeah?
Right, right.
Uh-huh.
Well, like I said, and if something negative happened to you, then I would tend to think that maybe there was an entity that you had an encounter with that didn't have designs in your own best interest. But because you felt that way, one of the things I found out about feelings is that when you're in that state, you are open up to positive and negative feelings, and they're going to be more intense than you've ever felt in your life. So if you feel love, it's going to be the most intense love you've ever felt. But if you feel fear, it's going to be the most intense fear you've ever felt, more than you feel in the physical body.
In the meantime, order your astral flashlight now.
That's it.
We got to run, huh? Thanks.
Thanks.
East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Dr. Albert Taylor. Hi.
Yes, hello.
Hello.
My name, well, I'm not going to say my name.
Okay. So you're a secret name at a secret location.
Yes.
All right.
Yes, especially because of the nature of basically what I'm about ready to say.
Fire away.
Basically, you know, I'm a lot like Albert now. I've had these experiences since I can remember. I literally have pictures that I have drawn at 2.5 that picture these things.
Wonderful.
But I do tend to agree with Art that it is a dualistic universe. You cannot have good unless you have bad. And I've seen a lot of different forms of entities. I've also seen them literally shift forms in front of me.
Mm-hmm.
So I know for a fact that sometimes when things look good, they're not good. And sometimes when things look not as, beautiful as our human eyes tend to rate beauty, sometimes they are very beautiful indeed.
Right.
It's a gut instinct that you got to go off of. I've seen the hooded figures. I have seen shadowy photonegative figures. I have seen blondes, beautiful blondes. I've seen little grays. I've seen everything. I've seen these things shift from one thing to another. And the only thing that keeps me from going crazy is I have had people literally see what I have seen. in conjunction with what is happening to me.
Well, I want more beautiful blondes.
Oh, well, sometimes they're not so beautiful.
I understand.
Sometimes they're not.
And so I hear you, Albert. Another one. See.
Well, you know, I have to back up to this. I'm a researcher. I'm a scientist. When there's evidence, I look at the evidence. So far, I haven't seen any. And I'm open to evidence. I'm open to the other side. But I, after all these experiments that I've done, I have to go with what evidence I have. And I haven't seen the negative.
Except perhaps for the hooded figures you saw once.
Well, but I don't know if they're negative because they didn't do anything. I have, you know, if they did something, but just by me looking at them and me being fearful, that is not enough to convince me that, you know, they are negative. It may still be me. So it's inconclusive as far as I'm concerned. It could very well be, but I really have to look at the evidence, and that's kind of that's what I'm presenting when I talk about this and what I've written in my book.
And
if there were something negative there, believe me, I would put it out there for everybody to look at.
You are an astral optimist.
Yes. Yes. I like repeatability, as any scientist would.
Sure.
If I repeat it and it comes out a certain number every time I repeat it, then I don't go looking for other answers until something pops up to indicate that, you know, that it's justified.
Okay, ma'am.
Well, I caution. I really do. I caution you. Because,
well, I'm skeptical to begin with.
Yes, and I'm a researcher also, and these experiences have literally caused me to be a researcher because I had to know what was going on with me.
Right.
Well, they are real.
Yes.
Oh, yes, they
are. I understand
that. And everything is relative. Always remember that. All this paranormal phenomena, everything is relative, and it all links together. And once you start finding those keys, which is what I have been doing for a long time, you start realizing that there is an agenda.
Right.
And it is an agenda that is very real.
Right.
All right. Hold it. We've got to hold it right there. Albert, always wonderful to have you on the program. Our time is up.
Been a pleasure.
Tell everybody, go to your bookstore or go to Amazon.com where they sell real cheap and get his book, Soul Traveler. And soon to come, Soul Traveler 2 to Hell and Back, that'll be the summer of 2001. Right now, you want to get Soul Traveler, or email Dr. Albert Taylor at Soul Traveler, that's S-O-L, common spelling, traveler, at AOL.com. Albert?
Mm-hmm.
It's been a blast. It's
been a pleasure, Art.
Really,
anybody would like to come to my website, it's alberttaylor.com. It's a lot easier to email me from there.
All right.
So give Ramona my love.
You're a great sport.
Thank you, sir.
Good night, Albert.
Bye-bye.
That's it, folks. Tomorrow night, Internet security, denial of service attacks, and much worse. Good night.